Chapter 12. Certain there was nothing more I could do for Jessica here, I looked to Richard and asked him for the favor I'd mentioned earlier, with an added caveat. I need you to break the spell binding me and Jessica. I also require a Dreamlands vision quest. You've said it's possible to travel the mists of time through ghoul ceremonies to this place. I have lost memories I need to recover. The spell breaking the connection between me and Jessica takes priority, however. If we can break our link, maybe she'll have the strength to recover. It was a lot to ask of my friend. Richard was only a hedge magician, and I'd never seen him do anything remotely comparable to what I was asking. Yet I wasn't sure if I could ask Catrin to do it. Even if she was capable of such magic, things had ended badly between us. Richard coughed and raised his hands defensively.
You're talking some serious juju here. The dreamwalking is easy enough. I can do that with just the right smoke and mirrors. Breaking an invocation to Nyar Lathotep, though? That requires ancient pre-Babylonian Age of Sorcerer King stuff. I'd need to get things from the elders underground for that.
Can you do it or not? My voice rose. I was about ready to snap. I had to know. If not, I'd find someone else.
Yes? Richard grinned, and it was highly unsettling. The issue is cost, John.
I see. Nothing came free in the wasteland, even from friends. I was disappointed in Richard, though not by much. Thankfully, I had something to barter with. It was another reason I owed Martha. I have a copy of the English translation of the Necronomicon, Richard. It has the original Arabic text included. I will allow you to read it if you do this for me.
Richard stopped motionless, his posture suddenly threatening. Don't lie to me, John.
I pulled out the book and opened it, flashing Richard a couple of pages, specifically a despicable set of pages describing how the great Old One Dagon lay with human women in order to sire the debased Deep One race. That particular set on pages had numerous illustrations on how to perform spells designed to attract them. Richard's eyes grew wide, taking in the reality of my offer.
Well now, that's big.
Pleased by his reaction, I asked, Is this enough?
Easily. I'll get the necessary stuff. See you in 5 or 6 hours.
Richard spoke no more and laughed. Little Jackie, who had been silent for much of the conversation, stared at Jessica and then glanced up at Mercury.
Is she going to live?
The facilities are crude but sufficient. If there's a scientific basis for this life transfer phenomenon, which there has to be, then it's mostly a case of getting her strength built back up, Mercury said, looking positively tickled to have a patient before her.
So yes?
Jackie asked.
Yes.
I hoped she was right. Are you all right staying here for the time being, Jackie?
Sure,
Jackie said, more enthusiastically than expected.
Mr. Jameson is awesome. I once was dared to sneak into his place, but my father smacked me for it after the fact. He's got some nifty stuff here.
Good, I said. He's the only person I really trust here. It's only temporary, though. I promise.
I don't like it, Mercury said. We should take her with us.
You're going to assist her in regaining consciousness. I ignored Mercury's objections. It was becoming the chief way I dealt with her.
As soon as I make sure that won't adversely affect her health, unless you have any objections to a professional torturer helping your friend,
Mercury said, looking up at me with a strained expression on her face. She looked genuinely hurt by my earlier words, something I was unprepared for. Just do it. If you can, I will speak no more ill of you, I said, leaving the room, trying to catch my breath. Seeing Jessica in her current condition, knowing it was my fault, was too much. I also didn't want to watch Mercury working on her, given how I'd treated her. Despite all the things she'd done, I owed her my life, and soon I would owe her my squadmate's life. She deserved better. I need a minute alone, I muttered, talking to myself. I decided Richard's guest bedroom was the best place to do so. I'd stayed there a couple of nights in the past. Heading inside, I felt someone coming up behind me. Slightly moving my head to the left, I saw Catrin's fist coming at the back of my head. Immediately, I ducked underneath her blow. Barely.
What the hell are you doing?
I asked, turning around and backing into the room. Catrin was ready to fight. That much was easy to see from her battle-ready stance and flaring eyes.
Ketrin spun around with her bare foot, moving to spin-kick me in the stomach. I managed to catch it and proceeded to sweep Rutherfoot out from under her. Ketrin moved with an effortless grace, somersaulting out of my grip onto her feet. Her fighting style was reminiscent of Brazilian capoeira, more dance-like than my own training. I raised my fists defensively. I thought we were going to hold off on killing me until after this necromancer business was settled. "Fighting you is not killing you," Ketrin said, tossing her spear to one side. "I'm glad that distinction is being made," I said, annoyed. I didn't have time for this. Jessica was dying and Ketrin wanted to fight? What was wrong with her? Ketrin continued her explanation, her movements graceful yet deadly. "You have a way of showing up when most needed. I am not one to question the will of the gods, but I need to know if your reflexes are still as capable as they were a year ago." "There are easier ways to test my reflexes," I said, my frown turning into a smirk. It was hard not to think of our time together. It had been 4 years into the disintegration of my marriage. She'd been both forward and exotic, two things I loved. "You gave up that right when you left the mating circle," Ketrin said, coolly. Her words held hints of her own attraction, however. Just the way she spoke them said that she still wanted me as much as I wanted her. "I didn't have a choice to enter it." Jumping up, she attempted to knee me in the face. I managed to grab her by the arms and tossed her on the ground. That proved a mistake as she somehow reversed my hold and sent me flying up against the wall. By the time I was looking up, she was already moving to bring down her foot onto my face. I barely managed to roll out of the way before her foot slammed into the ground beside me. The dust of the floor was now flying up from our athletic contest, covering us both. "You're lucky I'm holding back." I moved my hands up in front of my face, guarding it against her attacks. In truth, I wasn't, but psychological warfare was the only edge I had. The Dunwich valued strength as much as they did honor. I had called into question both by leaving her, showing myself to be weak-willed and an oathbreaker. It was now up to me to prove I still had the personal fortitude to be a worthy ally. I had no intention of disappointing. "If you were holding back, I'd know it." Ketrin proceeded to pull a knife from her leather outfit. I was surprised by that, less because of her willingness to escalate our conflict than because hers was not the most concealing of garments. It opened up all sorts of questions as to where exactly she'd been hiding it. Slashing toward my chest, I avoided each of her blows before making a move for her knife. I could have drawn my Relayan blade, but I intended to prove I didn't need it. "Maybe you overestimate yourself." "Show me." Ketrin anticipated my attack and immediately spun around to kick me in the chest. It was here the general discrepancy of our body weights proved to my advantage. Most men could not stand a blow from Ketrin and remain standing. Once they were down, she killed them with one easy blow. If I'd had any less of a pound advantage, I'd be on the ground, crippled. Still, it hurt like hell. Ignoring the pain of her blow, I managed to pull the knife from her hand and brought it up against her throat. Another second and she would have been able to turn the situation to her advantage, but the battle favored me this time. "Yield," I said, holding the knife steady at the base of her throat. "Or die." No sooner had I done so than I found myself going over her shoulder with a knife pulled from my grip. A second later, I was on the ground with a weapon once more in Katrin's hands. She had it pressed against the tip of my Adam's apple, a single motion ready to slit my throat at the slightest movement. "Well," I coughed out, stunned by my defeat, "it seems my reflexes have dulled somewhat." Ketrin let out a tinkle of melodic laughter, a great contrast to her normal seriousness. "Perhaps I have merely grown faster." "That you have." Ketrin snorted and assumed a combat-ready position a couple of feet away, apparently ready to continue our battle. "You're skilled enough for me to believe you're still a worthy ally. The care you show to your subordinate makes you soft, though. I do not know why warriors from your homeland are so sentimental. It is a weakness." Realizing this contest was now a friendly one, I went to the guest room door and shut it tightly before locking it. The chance to spar with Ketrin was a rare opportunity. "I've been accused of many things, but being sentimental is not one of them," I said. "Even so, most of my fellow soldiers don't feel as I do. Surely you've learned that from your lover."
"My lover?"
She seemed genuinely surprised by my words. "Peter,"
I said, letting a hint of jealousy taint my words as I entered into a combat-ready pose. It was an affectation since I couldn't help but feel only trauma recalling our time together, but I had to let her think otherwise. I needed her help to take down Ward, and I required her thinking she had a hold on me, no matter how disgusted I was by all this. Catherine stared at me for a moment, her eyes seemingly searching me for some hint of irony. After a second, she let forth a torrent of stunned laughter. "Is something funny?" I asked, already suspecting the truth.
"I'd sooner bet a deep one."
Catherine delivered a playful series of blows toward my face, ones I blocked one after the other. The combat had become slower paced, more like a practice session than genuine combat.
"He is an oathbreaker, one who has no honor."
"You accused me of that, too." I would never regret the fact I'd chosen to flee Dunwich territory. It had been for my family, after all. But I'd always felt a bit of sadness over doing so.
"You're an oath keeper, John. Even when circumstances prevent you from fulfilling the letter of them, you left me because you still loved your wife and children. I suspect you left the remnant because you love your squadron. I see how their absence tortures you now."
Catherine's voice took on a sympathetic tone. "I loved my children, but I'd been a horrible father to them and an even worse husband to my wife. I'd left because I loathed the Dunwich." What Catherine was saying was nothing more than the product of her mind trying to rationalize my departure. I needed her to play on her justifications. "I never meant to hurt you."
"Spare me the sentimentality, John. You may need it, but I do not," Catherine said, as her next kick went a little high and I was able to easily dodge it.
She continued to talk as I watched her motions closely, trying to guess her next move.
"Blasphemer or not, I might be able to forgive you. Peter, on the other hand, left my people as soon as you did. He started selling his services to the highest bidder, serving everyone from Kingsport's gangsters to Arizonian slavers."
"He's a slaver?" That shocked me. Desertion was one thing, slavery was another. I could no more work with a slaver than I could a cannibal or child murderer.
"Peter came as close as humanly possible without actually becoming one himself. He guarded the caravans, directed them to villages willing to sell their members, and killed those who would strike out against them. Only recently has he returned, claiming to have seen the light."
The suspicion in her voice spoke volumes about her opinion of the man. The Dunwich were brutal and efficient conquerors, but they had their own set of ethics. Like the remnant, it seemed they could look down on slavery as long as they didn't call it that.
"Why accept him as a member of your tribe, then?"
"We need every warrior we can get. The necromancer grows stronger every day,"
Catherine explained, right before I managed to successfully toss her onto the ground. She smiled, pleased at my getting the best of her even temporarily. "Who is he to you?" I decided to hold on to what I knew for the time being. I knew of Alan Ward's identity a decade ago, but not what he'd been doing since.
"A wizard, a priest, a scientist, a warlord, and everything in between. Rumors attest that he wandered in from the desert like you have been described doing. Boiling down corpses to their essential salts, he raised them from the dead. He also displayed other powers like healing and making crops grow."
"I take it his benevolence had a darker side."
The two of us began practicing other holds, close ones. It burned me to have Catherine so near and not wrap my arms around her in more intimate ways. I should have been thinking about the necromancer, but as we grappled with one another, my mind wandered to other things. The stress of everything I had endured longed for a release which could only come from the union of a man with his lover. Catherine pulled my arm around my back, shifting her weight as she put me into a painful wrist lock, an action which momentarily dulled my emerging feelings. Soon reports of corpses stolen in the night were whispered. Women were sent to him and their bodies were found elsewhere, drained of blood. His followers were joined by Deep Ones and those who worship Cthulhu. Whole villages were enslaved or exterminated at his command, their children taken away for some evil purpose. One of the Dunwich's outlying villages was amongst them. We don't have a name for him, though, if he has one.
Alan Ward.
You encountered him and survived.
Catherine let go of her wrist hold.
Yes. I took a deep breath. I just can't remember how.
We will find out,
Catherine said, walking close to me. She took my face into her hands and pressed her lips against mine.
Pulling away, I said, we shouldn't.
I pretended to be reluctant because I knew it would drive her to desire me more.
I hated the thought of her touching me, though.
I need you sharp and alert, John, Catherine said. You are a warrior in distress, and we still made oaths to be with one another. It is my right.
I trailed off. All right. Chapter 13. The sex was joyless but passionate, pushing me past the limits of my endurance. I had to think of Jessica, my wife, and even Mercury to finish, but if Catherine suspected I was in any way reluctant, she gave no sign of it and seemed responsive enough. Afterward, Catherine rested her head on my shoulder, as if our past differences mattered not at all. I myself fell asleep against my will. In my dreams, I saw an ancient cluster of worlds in a distant galaxy. Eventually, its sun died, and the star system's impossibly old advanced races traveled from their homes in forms not quite physical and not quite intangible. Whether these were Cthulhu and his ilk, I could not say, but they settled down upon this earth and merged with its soil. They warped the existing primordial life repeatedly, destroying and rebuilding what was evolving until they could place the consciousness of their offspring in their frames. This had gone to create races like the Deep Ones, Ghouls, Earth Movers, Shoggoths, and yes, humanity. I saw one ancient thing take the form of a man and lie with my mother. No, it was not true. Just a dream. My revulsion carried me to more recent memories that I had suppressed. I was naked and strapped to a table in the Black Cathedral's upper levels. There, Alan Ward, the necromancer, stood above me. He looked no older than 26, the same age he'd looked when he'd taught me, despite being over 40, yet he was all the more terrifying for his essential youth and beauty. Platinum-haired, tall, slender, pale, and delicate of feature, he looked like a human from the pre-rising days. A closer look at his face showed his appearance was slightly off in subtle and profound ways. There were a few extra rows of teeth in his smile, and his grin was a little too wide. Both sides of his face were identical, possessing none of the distinctiveness normal people possessed. Even Ward's lily-white skin was cursed, being not just pale but dry and papery. It was as if he was an exceptionally well-preserved corpse. Only his eyes were fully human, human but mad, a madness born from researching too long into things man was not meant to know. Walking around the table wearing a stylish business suit from the early 20th century, a fashion so ridiculously anachronistic it only added to his unsettling presence, he began speaking.
"You are the beginning, John. Leave me alone, please."
My voice was unable to rise above a whisper. I was helpless as a newborn babe, my body unresponsive to my commands to it. I could neither flee nor fight, just lie there in paralyzed agony. Ward ignored my pleas.
"You and Jessica are the beginning of a new humanity. For that, however, you must both be purged through pain."
Ward lifted his fingers and poured forth a torrent of black, unnatural lightning. It was not composed of electricity, however. Instead, the lightning was made of literal cracks in the fabric of reality. Each of these cracks tore into my flesh with a fury fiercer than any attack I'd ever endured, biting and sucking away my life with every strike. I screamed. The bolts felt akin to hot hooks tearing away bits of my flesh. It only grew worse over time. I saw other things as I relived the suffering of my torture, something I knew to be a memory now rather than a hallucination. I saw a vast gladiator arena where I was forced to do battle with abominations of sorcery, a golden pair of revolvers I used to shoot into the folds of a terrible amorphous multiform horror, and the sight of children in cages, stacked one on top of the other as if for storage. In my dreams, I remembered it all. I found I could think in my dream, struggling to grasp at the memories that were so close to the surface of my thoughts. Endure, damn it, endure. Just a few seconds and I'd remember everything. I could regain all of my memories and know what terrible things had been done to me and my squadron. I'd know where to find Ward and what weaknesses he had.
"John!"
A shot woke me up from my slumber with a start. I sat up from where I lay, a cold sweat covering my body. By my side was the sleeping form of Catherine, looking content from our lovemaking. Knocking at the door was Richard, his unnatural strength making even light rapping sound like a great pounding.
Damn it, just a little while longer and I wouldn't have needed that stupid ritual, I grunted. My hands shook from the memory of my torment. You weren't supposed to feel pain in a dream, yet the experience I'd relived in the dream was every bit as horrible as the real thing. I took some small comfort in the fact Ward had been forced to torture me, and I hadn't willingly assisted him in any way, but the fact I'd been so helpless before him galled me. I'll kill him, I swear, I coughed in between ragged breaths. No matter how long it takes, no matter who I have to kill to do it.
John, I mean it. Richard's voice carried through the door. I've gone through a lot of shit to get this weird-ass stuff. If you're trying to stiff me, I'm gonna sell it to the next half-insane soldier who wanders in from the desert.
I'm coming. I got up from the bed and opened the door, not bothering to dress. Richard was on the other side, wearing the same clothes as earlier, but now covered in cavern dust. A number of strange arcane artifacts were in his hands. Candles, bags of powder, stone tablets, dolls, and objects I couldn't even begin to identify. I had no idea where he'd gone, though the most likely answer was the deep network of caverns the ghouls had dug underneath the earth's surface. The ghoul took one look at my form and averted his eyes.
Damn it, John, could you put some pants on?
You asked me to open the door, I said. Next time you should be more specific. Richard snorted and sniffed the air, looking over at Catrin's naked form. She was waking up. Richard snorted and said,
A word of advice, John, when you're a guest in someone else's house, it's polite not to leave their rooms hot and sticky.
I'll bear that in mind, I said, uninterested in dealing with a ghoul's prejudices. You have the materials necessary to perform your spell?
Yeah.
Richard juggled the pile in his arms a bit.
I got your what's-its.
Catrin stretched her arms and slid out of bed, walking up behind me without bothering to get dressed either. Dreamwalker, I would like to review your preparations. I know something of the eldritch arts myself. Richard stared, gazing up and down her naked form.
Okay, forget everything about what I said. You can do whatever you like in my place, whenever you want.
Avert your eyes, ghoul, or lose them, Catrin said, tossing her hair behind her head. Richard turned around, looking as embarrassed as a half-man, half-canine could.
Hey, it's not my fault. You stick that in front of me, I'm gonna look. Do you know how long it's been since I've had sex? Ages! I'm telling you, ghoul women give new meaning to the word dog-faced.
Against my will, I smiled. You are a true friend, Richard. However, I divert your eyes for your sake.
Yeah, yeah,
he said, turning his head. Thank you. I could never repay him for what he'd done. Thank you for all of this. You are the greatest man I've ever known. Richard seemed bothered by my statement, not speaking for several seconds. Finally, giving a half-hearted smile, he said,
It's been a long time since a human has said that to me. Now put some friggin' clothes on.
Needing no further encouragement, I picked up my clothes off the floor and slipped on my undergarments, before doing the same with the dusky black and gray clothes I was forced to wear. I would have to barter or borrow a change of clothes before I left Scrapyard. I didn't intend to travel all the way to Kingsport looking like I was from the Remnant. Catrin retrieved her own clothes as well, quicker than I expected. She was usually less modest, caring a little if individuals admired her body. Then again, most individuals weren't Richard. He was more polite than I expected during the process, only sneaking a few peeks as she did so. Once Catrin and I were dressed, the three of us exited into the workshop outside. Jackie was sitting in the driver's seat of a strangely beautiful midnight blue car without a top. A convertible, I believe they were called. It was unlike any other vehicle I'd ever seen. When I'd first arrived, the vehicle had been covered with a dusky gray sheet, but it was now revealed in all its glory. Richard had affixed the automobile's trunk with solar panels and a number of spare batteries, but the vehicle otherwise looked identical to what it must have resembled when first built, probably in the 1960s or so. God, Richard must have spent decades restoring the thing. I'd never before seen a car that wasn't a composite or a crude reconstruction. This was the first original, or at least semi-original, I'd viewed outside of a history tape or yellow-paged magazine. I was so entranced by the machine, I barely noticed Peter Goodhill was leaning up against it. Staring directly at Catrin, then me, he asked,
I take it you two had a good time while I was gone?
Catrin had said she and Peter weren't together, but I wondered if Peter knew that. Putting my arm over her shoulder, I said, Yes, we did. Jackie smiled, honking the horn of the vehicle.
This is great. I've never been in a real car before. Well, one that works.
Richard put all of the various bits of occult paraphernalia on the back of the trunk, before sticking his used cigarette from earlier back in his mouth.
I call it the Blue Meanie. Don't ask me to explain, it's before your time. I figured if you were gonna give me a look at the Necronomicon, assuming it proves to be legit, the least I could do was give you a way to get to Kingsport.
What? I blinked, unable to believe what I was hearing. Richard just shrugged.
It's got a fully charged set of batteries and some weapons in the trunk. Decent ones, not that cobbled-together crap you use in the Remnant.
I blinked, stunned by the generosity of my friend.
Richard, this is a princely gift.
Taking my arm off Catrin's shoulders, I stepped to the car's side and ran my fingers along the edge of its frame. I'd never owned anything like this in my entire life.
Yeah, I'm a regular Prince Charming. Only Sleeping Beauty would have woken up screaming if I'd kissed her.
Richard coughed violently, then lit another cigarette. You know, those things can kill you, I said, not bothering to look up from the car.
200 years and no cancer, Richard said, puffing. I'll take my chances.
I turned around the shop, looking for any sign of Mercury. I didn't see her amongst the group assembled.
Where's Dr. Takahashi?
She took off, Richard answered.
What? I asked, my eyes widening. Richard raised a reassuring hand, seeing my immediate distress.
I think she's over at the bar getting drunk on the local mud beer. She finished up with Jessica and walked out in a huff as soon as I came back.
Were you two involved?
No,
I said firmly.
Maybe she's just trying to get to know the locals then, Richard said, shrugging. She'll be fine. Mercury's human after all.
So noted. Catrin surveyed the convertible, pacing around it as if it was hers, which, given her rank in the Dunwich, she could probably make happen.
You have an excellent vehicle, Richard. Peter and I have our own transportation, but this should allow you to meet us in the city.
I blinked, glancing up at her.
The city? You're going there too?
The Dunwich are amassing an army, Peter said, gritting his teeth. They're going to attack the Necromancer's stronghold head on.
I see. The Dunwich never did anything halfway.
Yeah, Aragorn here's gonna take Gondor up to the Black Gate. It's suicide, Richard said, shaking his head.
What?
I asked. Long story. I'll be busy for the next half hour.
Gathering up all the occult artifacts he'd assembled, Richard walked through the guest room door and slammed it behind him.
Don't disturb me unless you want to get eaten by something unmentionable which isn't me.
What a strange man, I muttered. Catra nodded in agreement. We know the approximate location of the Black Cathedral, but no details about its defenses. If you can recover your memory, we will have a substantial advantage. Something told me Richard was right when he described a direct assault as suicide. I kept my mouth shut, however. I will do what I can. Hopefully I will see you in a day or so. Reaching around, I placed a warm kiss on Catrin's lips. I could feel Peter's eyes boring into the back of our heads and the cold hatred which came with intense jealousy. In a way, it was almost comforting. Jealousy was a purely human emotion, something born and bred in the soul of every man. How ironic it was for a relationship I couldn't stand. Catrin pulled away first, smiling brightly.
Stay safe, John.
Jackie watched the two of us from the car seat, fascinated by our romance.
Aw.
Oh, John, I heard Peter speak behind me. I have something for you as well.
What's that? I asked, turning my head.
This.
He then threw a punch at me, his fist covered in a brass knuckle he'd slipped on.
Huh.
Apparently I'd been right on the money on him being jealous. Chapter 14. As with Catrin, I saw Peter's swing coming before it connected. This gave me time to duck under it, albeit just barely. Peter wasn't the same caliber of warrior as Catrin, but he was still an R&E ranger, the best of a hungry and violent race of survivors. So I didn't feel guilty about jabbing my fists up into his ribs, a cheap shot to repay a cheap shot.
Oof!
Peter choked before recovering quickly. Kneeing me in the gut, he punched me across the face with a fierce blow that sent me spinning backwards. Hitting the ground with a thud, I threw a punch at Peter's abdomen and then headbutted him across the chin, recovering my resolve. Catrin reacted first, her outrage over the display clear. Pointing at Peter, she shouted,
"As your priestess, I command you to stand down!"
"No, this one is mine,"
Peter growled. Reaching over to a nearby bench, he grabbed a tire iron.
You both disgust me. He's not even a person.
You'll pay for that remark,
I said, seeing his weapon. Our encounter had gone from a brawl to a life-and-death struggle. Catrin seemed stunned by his stupidity, momentarily senseless.
You have sworn away your life.
Leave him to me, I said, rising up. I'm going to enjoy killing him.
That was when Peter came at me with his newly acquired weapon. Grabbing some sawdust off the ground, I threw it in his face, temporarily blinding him.
Monster!
Peter shouted. His blow missed, and I promptly pulled the tire iron from his hands before throwing him into a nearby pile of machinery.
And proud of it, I said.
If Richard heard our struggle, he wisely decided to stay out of it. The door to the guest room remained firmly closed, limiting our conflict to the garage. Peter immediately got up, charging at me and beginning another series of brutal swings at my face. His attacks were wild and emotional, in direct defiance of his CQC training. Had I not been overwhelmed with anger myself, I could have easily disabled him and sent him painlessly to the ground. Instead, I blocked each of his blows before starting to punch him in the face with purely the intent to hurt. Jackie and Catrin looked on as Peter regained some of his senses, his mouth dripping blood from my earlier blows. Jabs, kicks, and grapples followed as we sought to beat each other senseless. Peter wasn't as strong or as skilled as I, but he was faster, and his blows were unrestrained by mercy. There was darkness inside him that was almost palpable, a darkness driving him to hit harder and faster than he normally would have. Peter's anger was a distinct advantage as I held myself back, pulling my punches when they could have shattered bones. I wasn't sure I wanted to do him any permanent lasting harm, and that was hurting my chances. Then he picked up a wrench.
Fuck it,
I said, grunting in rage. Seeing him swinging it toward my face, I quite simply went nuts. Blocking the wrench with my tire iron, I kicked him savagely in the stomach before ripping the weapon from his grip. I then struck him across the face with my weapon. He was lucky he wasn't killed instantly. Instead, he just hit the ground like a sack of potatoes.
Oh, Peter started to speak, spitting out teeth.
No, never again, I said.
My shoulder started burning again as I felt a hate within me I couldn't remember feeling before, but seemed to drown out all other feelings. Pulling him up by the dog tag and lifting the wrench over my shoulder, I was ready to kill him. Then I began to hear music. Not the retro tunes of Richard's jukebox, but something from another world. A weird, alien piping mixed with unnatural-sounding flutes and surreal stringed instruments, which drowned out all other sounds. In the background, there was chanting. The voices were not all human, each speaking the same word over and over again. Azathoth, 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 Azathoth. Azathoth was the name of the Dunwich god of creation and destruction. Supposedly, he'd created the universe in a fit of madness. I had no idea why I thought of him and the terrifying music devoted to his glories. Yet I could feel the music running through my body as my shoulder burned. The act of murdering Peter was like an action sacred to that dread god. Dropping the wrench from my grip, I blinked. Slowly, the bizarre music quieted and eventually faded away. What the hell was happening to me? Realizing I was still holding a nearly senseless Peter, I ripped the dog tags free from his neck.
You do not deserve these. You are a disgrace to the United States Remnant and the city of New Arkham. You are a horrible example of a human being, a slaver and scum. Get out of my sight. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you.
Peter looked up to me and spit blood against my chest, defiant to the end. His courage didn't last long, however, because he immediately ran off afterward. Watching him flee like a coward, I wondered why I'd spared his life. A smarter man would have killed him then and there. I couldn't do it, though. Not when I didn't know if it was me that wanted him dead or something else inside me. The fact I couldn't tell the difference frightened me more than I could put into words.
You should have killed him, Catrin said, watching him leave. Now you'll have to do it later if I don't get to him first.
I know. Jackie looked at me from the edge of the convertible, her eyes briefly looking like Richard's. For a second, as the last of the music faded away, I swore I could see the canine visage of a ghoul superimposed over her human features. I saw her red hair growing out of her ghoul-like head, a hideous sight given her normal cuteness. Shaking away the hallucination, I took several deep breaths to calm myself.
I'm sorry, Jackie. A girl like you shouldn't be witness to that sort of violence.
It's okay, Mr. Booth. I saw my dog kill plenty of people before,
Jackie said, looking at me with a dissonant cheerfulness.
I'm sorry you didn't kill him.
Me too, I muttered. What the hell was wrong with me? I didn't get a chance to think about that because Katrin took my hand and whispered, When you were about to kill Peter, I saw something in your eyes. What did you see? Nothing, I said, pulling away. Katrin half-closed her eyes. Do not lie to me, John. You had the look of a high priest in your eyes, either that or a man who has the blessing of the awakened gods upon him. I gave her a sideways glance. I don't feel blessed.
Blessed or cursed is relative.
Katrin took a deep breath. Tell me what you saw. You can trust me.
I couldn't, but I'd invested heavily in our alliance. I heard something, music and strange voices. They were chanting the name of your creator god.
Azathoth, the creator and destroyer. The blind idiot god has taken notice of your quest.
Katrin sounded odd. Him or his messenger, Nyarlathotep. Perhaps a sorcerer did not place that mark on you, but the gods themselves.
Blind idiot god?
Jackie asked. Azathoth is the maker of the universe according to Dunwich mythology, but he's a gibbering, mindless abomination. They believe he will eventually destroy the universe as effortlessly as he made it, I explained, remembering all I'd learned from the Necronomicon and my earlier conversations with Katrin. Jackie's eyes widened.
Wow, the Dunwich have awesome gods.
I'll try and keep my enthusiasm contained. Katrin's eyes became so cold I believed she was about to kill me. Do not mock our faith. I'm not, I said, lying. If you say I'm blessed by alien gods, I will take your word for it. I had my own suspicions about what had happened, too. I died at the hands of the Night Gaunt, genuinely died. Somehow this had activated the hand of Nyarlathotep that had been placed on my skin long ago. Jessica was currently having her life force drained to heal me, and somehow this was also putting me in touch with Eldritch forces, possibly ones associated with the Dunwich's so-called gods. If my theory was true, it was all the more important that I break the bond between me and Jessica. The mark could be doing irreversible damage to me, making me into something less than human. Worse still, I could be becoming something more. It was better than the idea I'd always had something other inside me, but not by much. Are you okay, Jackie?
Oh, yes, I love it here, Jackie said. Can I stay?
I thought about that and decided, increasingly, she was half ghoul and doomed to become like Richard. Death would be a kindness, but I wouldn't be able to do that to a young girl. Better she be with her own kind. I'll think about it.
What you thinking about, Mr. Booth?
Jackie asked, obviously seeing I was deep in thought. Nothing important, I said, smiling. Katrin leaned in and gave me one last kiss, this one long and lingering. Pulling back, she gave me a slight nod before walking out. Keep the spear, John. You may need it. Also be nice to the one you care for. You will need her. Do you mean Jessica or Mercury?
Yes,
Katrin said. Watch over the child, Jackie as well. I feel your fates are intertwined. I was now more confused than ever. All right. I walked back into the guest room, my eyes giving one last glance toward her as she disappeared out the front door. Inside the chamber, Richard had drawn a mystic circle on the ground with pig's blood. The symbols inside seemed to pulse and shift like the ones on my knife. Once more, the sight of the spellwork made me ill, causing me to look away. I'd seen more than my fair share of debased rituals in the wasteland, spells designed around summoning horrific monsters, assuming unnatural forms, and even raising the dead. More often than not, these enchantments enacted a horrific toll on their casters. Those who dabbled in the arcane arts usually ended up deformed, insane, or both. It bothered me I had to seek the assistance of sorcery to save Jessica's life. Even sorcery worked by someone I trusted as much as Richard. I hate magic, I muttered, shutting the door behind me and locking it.
Yet you own a copy of the Necronomicon, Richard pointed out. Can't get much more magical than that. It's the Quran of the creepy, the Bible of the black arts, the...
Knowledge isn't magic, I interrupted, keeping my eyes closed before sitting down on the ground beside Richard. The Necronomicon contained a great deal of useful information beyond the spells inside.
Sure it is, Richard said, starting to draw pictograms and blood on my forehead. All knowledge is magic. The problem is that knowledge is power, and power corrupts. So by definition, knowledge corrupts.
You just made that up, I said, staring at him.
Of course I made it up. Who else would say something so wise? I was able to get the spell I needed from the ghoul elders living a few miles under the valley, but this is not going to be easy. I can't just wave my hand and remove the bond between you and Jessica.
Just tell me what I have to do. I waited for him to finish before shifting positions to Indian style on the ground.
We need to go talk to an elder thing,
Richard explained, assuming a position identical to mine. An elder thing? I repeated, taking the same skeptical tone as Mercury had during our conversation regarding the color. I vaguely remembered reading about these elder things in the Necronomicon, but I'd been hoping they had some other name to refer to themselves by. Seriously, did I just walk up to them and call them things? It seemed rude.
Don't start with me. Richard poked me in the chest with a clawed finger. Their actual name is unpronounceable by humans. They're big, powerful, and almost as old as the great old ones. If anything in the universe can break this spell and restore your memories, it's one of them.
I wasn't about to argue with him. What are they doing in the Dreamlands? Richard shrugged.
Safer than remaining on Earth, I guess. Once they were the top dogs on our planet, millions of years back, ruling the world in their arcane, tentacly fashion. Then the great old ones came from the sky and kicked them off their throne. The Elder Things had human slaves and Shoggoths to look after them and lasted as a viable culture until the end of the last Ice Age. The few remaining ones fled from Antarctica to the Dreamlands about a century and a half ago.
That recently? I was surprised the old Earth's governments hadn't detected them.
Humans are a dumb, unobservant species. You'd be surprised at how much shit was going down without anyone realizing it.
Richard huffed.
No offense.
None taken, I said. My opinion of my fellow man has never been particularly high. How are we going to persuade this being to help me?
I have no fucking idea. Richard coughed into one hand. That's your problem. Stop asking so many questions. You're about to enter an alternate dimension through astral projection. Most people would be fascinated by the shit we're doing.
Fair enough, I said. I then removed my shirt so Richard could start drawing more symbols on my chest. He also lit a set of candles, which filled the air with a strange, pungent aroma. I recognized the smell as ghoul dust, a powerful hallucinogen the underground race traded with outsiders. Its use was often said to cause insanity and death.
Great.
What can you tell me about the Dreamlands? I asked, as I started feeling a bit woozy. I knew very little about the place other than it was a place priestesses like Catrin and psychics like Martha visited regularly. Professor Ward had speculated it was a quantum dimension adjacent to our reality, affected by the now proven phenomenon of psychic resonance. Richard and apparently all ghouls everywhere considered it just as important as the physical world, which told me jack shit about what to expect.
It's the collected mental diarrhea of the universe. Every little thought you have is reflected there, and so are the thoughts of everyone you've ever met. All of humanity's puny little gods, along with every little fool who's ever been so foolish as to believe in an afterlife, exists in the Dreamlands,
Richard said, pulling a leather wineskin out from under the bed and handing it to me.
Drink this. It'll put hair in your chest. Admittedly, not as much as mine.
Doesn't sound so bad, I said. Taking a drink, I found myself coughing violently. The substance inside tasted like octopus ink mixed with blood.
It wouldn't be if it was just humanity's delusions of self-importance and masturbation fantasies. The problem is it's also every little single terrible thought and nightmare every other species in the universe has had. Let me tell you, the most minuscule thought of Cthulhu could destroy the collective dream worlds of an entire planet of lesser beings. You know, folks like us.
How depressing, I said, coughing again.
Hey, I didn't make the world. I just try and live in it.
Richard shrugged. I was tempted to ask when the spell would begin, only to have myself start going into convulsions. My mouth foamed over as my eyes rolled back into my head. Every part of my body felt alight with fire. Finally, after several moments of agonizing pain, the entire world faded away. For a split second, I thought I was about to die. Then, almost immediately, I found my eyes opening to an alien sky. Chapter 15. I stared up at the alien sky, blinking my eyes. No, not an alien sky. It was the sky of a world long dead. Everything was a surreal blue color. There were strange, puffy white clouds, and the air was fresh. The sun was shining in the air, the color yellow, and I could hear birds chirping in the distance. It was a place I had only seen in my dreams, a bright and beautiful place the great old ones destroyed long ago. I was in the shadow of old Earth's glory.
"Wow, this is totally not what Earth's sky looked like," Richard said, walking up ahead of me. "What's that smell in the air? Oxygen? Geez, man, you've got some weird ideas about what the 21st century smelled like. It was mostly carbon monoxide and poison."
"Please be quiet, Richard. I want to appreciate this." I ran my arms through the dirt around me, making an angel, before standing up. I was no longer dressed in camouflage, but instead in my R&E uniform. My father's leather Stetson was affixed prominently to my head along with his weather-beaten duster to my back, and I saw my heavy assault rifle nestled up against some nearby rocks. Amazing. In what was becoming a running theme in this trip, I saw I was once more on the side of a cliff face. This one overlooked a vast, sweeping vista consisting solely of grave sites. They were marked with swords, guns, and other weapons of war in place of headstones. In the center of the seemingly endless military cemetery, a spiraling tower stood, which spun infinitely into the air. The tower vaguely resembled the same architecture which comprised the Black Cathedral, but was majestic as opposed to ominous. "Where are we?" I asked, stunned by the sight.
"The Dreamlands, specifically the Fields of Blades," Richard said, glancing over the cliff face and taking in the somber landscape. "The Jungian archetypal representation of the endlessness and futility of war. Wow, John, your subconscious is a real vacation spot."
"I don't put much faith in psychology." I took a deep breath. "What does the tower represent?"
"It's a tower, John. It's probably where the Elder Things live. Remember, we're just using your dreamscape to find them."
"Anyway, why are you here?" I had been under the impression this would be a solo mission. Then again, I knew very little about the Dreamlands. You probably thought I needed a guide.
"No way am I leaving you out here. Oh, shit."
Richard pointed in the direction over my left shoulder.
"On your six."
Looking over my shoulder, I saw the decaying form of my dead father. Shit. The rotted corpse was dressed in a tattered version of the uniform he was buried in. Half of its face was blown off by the shotgun blast which had killed him. The air reeked of its rotting stench as if it had been dead for a week. I was surprised I'd missed it while breathing in the fresh Dreamlands air. Spinning me around with its desiccated hands, the zombie-like creature proceeded to grab me by the throat.
"Not my son,"
it gargled through a twisted, mangled jaw. Its grip was tight and vice-like as I struggled to pull its fingers free from my neck.
"You're not my father."
Pressing my hands against the creature's face, I struggled to push it back before pressing my thumbs into its eyes. Both fingers slid straight into the soft tissue, the half-rotted orbs collapsing beneath the pressure I applied. The monster emitted an inhuman growl before pulling back, clawing at its bleeding eye sockets. I tried to maneuver myself out of the way, but the monster proceeded to slam one of its huge arms against my face, sending me to the ground.
"Not my son!"
it screamed again, charging its eyeless body at me. Tackling me to the ground, it once more tried to strangle me.
"Need help?"
Richard said, acting as if there was nothing to be concerned about.
"Shoot it!"
I screamed, struggling to maneuver my hands around its neck. Each breath was more difficult. In a few moments, I'd be dead if Richard didn't intervene. I was not going to give this bastard the chance to finish what he started 3 decades ago.
"Shoot it now!" "Fine,"
Richard muttered before walking over to where I'd once stood and taking up my heavy assault rifle. The weapon proceeded to fill the creature's chest with holes. Despite being undead, it seemed pained by the action. With a quick motion, I snapped its neck and sent the monster spiraling to the ground.
"Feel better? Give me my gun."
I extended my hand towards Richard, looking at the strange dream creature on the ground.
"Sure."
Richard handed the gun to me. I proceeded to aim it at Richard, not bothering to look from the corpse on the ground.
"Never joke around when my life is in danger. I wouldn't do the same with you. If you ever do something similar again, I'll kill you."
I meant it, too. As beneficial as I found our partnership, I wasn't about to risk my safety. I would kill whoever I had to in order to get to Alan Ward. He would pay for killing my squadron, and if I had to sacrifice others to do it, well then, so be it.
"Sorry, it was just a joke."
Richard shrugged before glancing down at the corpse. Take a look at it. Slowly but surely, its features began changing from a deformed representation of my father to something else entirely. The final result was a creature the size of a small horse. It stood taller than my father, at least 8 feet, and was a mass of deformed muscle. It possessed claws more akin to knives than talons, and a mouth that looked like it made up 80% of its face. Below its waist was a pair of kangaroo-like legs, ending in cloven hooves. If Richard was hard to look at, this creature was absolutely ghastly.
A ghast,
Richard appropriately named it, pinching the ends of his snout.
The ancestral enemies of ghouls.
Do they normally assume the form of loved ones to stalk someone? I asked, appalled at the intimacy of the violation.
No.
Richard looked distinctly uncomfortable.
They're ghasts, John. They don't do the whole fascinated with humans thing my race is famous for. They eat, sleep, fuck, and kill.
Like humans, I said, struggling for breath. So this creature is unlikely to have assumed my father's form on his own?
You could say that. Of course, they also die in sunlight, so I'm not sure what the hell is going on with this particular one.
Interesting, I said, struggling to get as much oxygen down my bruised windpipe as possible.
Go on. If it's protected by magic, whoever set this stuff up has some serious juice behind his or her spells. That kind of magic has not been seen since the days when Atlantis, Mu, and Relier were only half sunk.
Richard reached down and parted some of its fur, revealing tattooed sigils to the elder god Hypnos. I'd read about Hypnos during my studies under Dr. Ward. He was a deity of sleep and dreams, equally likely to do good or evil. Supposedly, only the most powerful sorcerers attempted to harness his power, since one could never tell whether one's entreaties would be met with favoritism or retribution. Richard then said,
Yep, this is big-ass sorcery here. You don't call on this guy unless you're absolutely sure you know what you're doing.
So you're saying someone sent this thing after me? Dressed, for lack of a better word, as my father?
Someone who knew you were coming to the Dreamlands, yes,
Richard said, blinking his large dog-like eyes.
Got any suspects?
One. Damn it, things had just gotten a whole lot more complicated. What now? Richard looked out to the tower.
We walk.
How long do you think it will take?
As long as it takes.
Chapter 16. As long as it takes turned out to be 7 weeks, 3 days, and 11 hours. The travel time bothered me until Richard explained it would only be seconds in the real world. Either that or we'd starve to death and our problems would be over anyway. In the end, there was plenty of food and water to be found within the Dreamlands, if you knew where to look. We traded with a tribe of nomadic horned men, fought several winged horrors from Leng, enjoyed the hospitality of several cloven-hoofed succubi, and paid our respects to the many warriors whose dreams were buried here. By the end of our journey, we were exhausted and worn to the quick, but perhaps a little bit wiser. Standing less than a yard from the Elder Thing's tower, we both stared upward as if to try and catch a glimpse of the tower's top, a futile gesture since the tower appeared to be literally infinite in its height. Far away, the tower had looked like it was our gargantuan but comprehensible structure that was only a few miles away. Now that we had reached it, we saw the tower's true nature was unfathomably greater. The building's mass defied description, and we were less than ants compared to its Olympian presence. Even the great old ones would have felt terribly small at the foot of the enormous building. The staggering fact was there were doors and windows built into the tower for beings who would not even see us for their height. I could not imagine the mass of the beings inhabiting this tower, what sort of life they led, or how they would react to us, if they noticed us at all.
You know,
Richard looked down and started to roll a cigarette, having stolen some Ulthar tobacco from the horned men we'd met.
That is one big fucking tower.
Yeah, I said, not looking away. It really is.
Getting through the front door is gonna be tough, Richard said, and by tough I mean impossible.
We were right in the front of the tower's single visible door. Unfortunately, there was seemingly no way to open it. It would take unimaginable force to budge it even a few degrees. Had a small crack existed under the door, we could have easily fit underneath it, but no such space was present. It was hundreds of feet high and probably dozens of feet thick. I saw no way to break it open, especially not with the minimal equipment in our possession. This is going to be difficult, I said, taking a deep breath. Were the elder things this big?
I don't think so, Richard said. I've never actually met one, mind you, but they used to live in Antarctica. I'm pretty sure this place would be visible from Earth on Jupiter.
You have a point. The fact something like this can exist baffles me.
I shook my head.
So how are we going to get in?
Richard shrugged his shoulders.
Not my problem.
Thank you, I said sarcastically. I'm glad I can count on you.
Hey, I'm just being honest.
The ghoul threw his hands up in the air.
I have no idea. You're the brains here, soldier boy. I'm just the guide.
Maybe we should just knock? I suggested, not really having any answers for tackling a problem of this magnitude.
Somehow I don't think that would work.
Richard pointed between us.
Dress code and all.
Richard's Hawaiian shirt had mostly rotted off him, leaving him looking more like a regular ghoul, naked and animalistic. The rain and the yellowish spores we'd encountered had mostly eaten it away. My own clothes were now covered in mud, thread-worn and looking like they'd been through hell and back. Fine, I said, trying to think of other options. Then I remembered an old saying my father had taught me. The only thing infinite that can be held in a man's hand is a thought. It was a Zen koan he'd picked up from a wasteland mystic named Carter. Now I could see the wisdom in it, especially here.
Richard, close your eyes.
Why?
Richard suddenly tensed.
What are you planning?
Just do it. I tried to focus on the fact this was my dream. Even if it somehow linked up with a greater uber dream all beings shared, it was still formed by my thoughts and ideas. That meant I had the power here.
Okay.
Richard finally obeyed my command, shutting his furry eyelids. Doing the same, I imagined Richard and I were tall enough to walk into the tower through the front door. I stepped forward, putting my hands out, believing I had enough force to move mountains. Everything would depend on my believing the impossible, something I tried to do at least 6 times a day. I was rewarded by the feel of the stone giving way, slowly at first, but gradually more deliberately. The tower didn't become any smaller, but its proportions shifted, as if the universe was reorienting itself to my vision. Did the great old ones see the world this way? If so, did that make the physical universe their dream? I wasn't sure I wanted to know the answer. My musings ended when I felt the stone fall forward as if pushed down. It struck the ground with a titanic, but not ear-splitting thud.
Huh, it worked, I said, opening my eyes. We were now standing in a tower built for beings only slightly larger than ourselves.
If we had gone down the rabbit hole, we'd now just drunk from the bottle labeled Drink Me.
John, what you just did is impossible. The Dreamlands don't work this way.
Richard looked almost offended at what I'd done.
If they did, I would have advised you to dream us up a damn plane.
I had considered that, I admitted, on my first day, no less.
You might have mentioned that.
Richard's voice was shrill, and I actually heard growling in the back of his inhuman throat. I just figured you'd have told me if such a thing were possible. Besides, I was enjoying the journey, I said, shrugging my shoulders. I got a lot of thinking done while I was out. I think I solved a number of philosophical riddles I'd been long pondering, like, why do good things happen to bad people, and where do my socks go when I put them in the dryer?
Next time, save your weird-ass walkabout for when I'm not potentially starving to death in the physical world.
Richard looked about ready to tackle me. I admit it felt good to pay him back for what he'd done during the ghast attack. The interior of the tower was surprisingly homey, albeit not in a manner most human beings would find comfortable. The hallway was circular and uneven, as opposed to square, often looking like a size-shifting worm had dug its passages. There were torches along the walls, but each was tipped with a coral-like crystal instead of fire. What was recognizably furniture was present as well, but for bodies unrelated to any hominid ancestor.
I'm not sure if I should be unnerved or reassured at the similarities, I said, taking a moment to soak in the alien architecture.
The elder things are carbon-based beings.
Richard warily began walking in.
That's rarer than you think. I suppose in the grand scheme of things, that makes them closer to our race than, say, the great old one species or specieses. What's the plural form of species?
Species, you said our race? I asked, enjoying his crisis of language.
You've adopted one of our kids. You're an honorary ghoul now. Just don't expect to win any beauty pageants.
Richard slapped me on the back. His words confirmed something I'd expected for a long time. Little Jackie was a ghoul-human hybrid and doomed to undergo the same transformation Richard had undergone. Richard, was it painful?
The change?
Richard's voice grew very cold, almost sad. Yes.
Excruciating.
Richard's voice, still human despite his canine mouth, changed only a little as he said that one word. That tiny change in his voice, however, spoke volumes. I'm sorry. The two of us soon found ourselves at a strange, twisting staircase, one which rose high up toward a star-shaped doorway. Beyond it, strange noises echoed and weird lights flickered on and off. We both paused at the base of it, not ready to make the trek up, even if our quarry was close at hand. Richard took a moment to think before he started speaking again.
Listen, if you want some advice about Jackie, the best thing...
And then he was dead. The nature of combat is a violent, swift, unromantic thing. That was the first thing I'd learned as a soldier. One moment you were standing next to someone you thought of as a friend and brother in arms, the next you were cradling their dead body. In Richard's case, he was struck by a bolt of strange alien energy which passed through the front of his chest and out the other side like a gunshot. A massive gaping hole was created by the blast, killing him instantly. I had only a split moment to react before a second bolt was discharged in my direction. Reflexes are faster than conscious thought, however. I was able to maneuver out of the way of where my assailant was aiming, long enough to privately vow I would kill whoever had taken my best friend from me. Staring up the top of the stairs, I saw the Elder Thing. It was not as sanity-blasting as some of the creatures I'd seen in the wasteland, yet the creature was still alien and terrifying. It was a creature from another world, whose race had colonized the Earth when it was nothing more than boiling seawater. The Elder Thing stood 8 feet tall with a barrel-like chest and starfish-esque appendages where its head and feet should have been. It had other inhuman qualities which unsettled me just looking at them, such as stalks for eating and seeing in ways humans could not appreciate, but none of these interested me. The only things that did were the crystalline rod it held in one of its tentacles, the weapon which had killed my friend, and the fact it was Richard's murderer.
Murderer!
I screamed at the top of my lungs, forgetting all thought of how the creature might help me. Lifting my heavy assault rifle, I poured the dream-based ammunition into the creature's weapon. The monster didn't seem to understand what I was doing, only moving its weapon to fire again as the tendril holding it was promptly shredded. The Elder Thing let forth an inhuman shriek as blue and greenish fluids poured out of its wounds. The crystal rod shattered seconds later, disarming it. In that moment, a red mist came over my eyes, drowning out all reason. I continued firing into the monster's chest, wounding it further until the magazine was empty. The Elder Thing was badly injured from my assault, bleeding from multiple holes spread across its chest, while letting forth wails of pain which no terrestrial animal could duplicate. Grabbing my rifle by the barrel, I charged up the stairs and slammed my body squarely into the Elder Thing's chest. The creature possessed strength no human could match, but the intensity of my anger drowned out all difference in our sizes. The Elder Thing was thrown to the ground, its frame sliding across the polished surface of the tower's floors. I could tell by the shrieking and wailing it made that it was stunned by the ferocity of my attack. Good.
Butcher! Beast! Creature!
I screamed at the top of my lungs, bringing the end of my rifle around and smashing it against the tendril sticking out of the top of its octagonal body. The tissue there was soft and pieces broke off with the first blow. The thing had no eyes or face to read emotions from, but I could sense its fear as I brought down the butt of my weapon into its head tentacles again and again. Its wounds sprayed me with the Elder Thing's neon-colored internal fluids, dyeing my attire a shade of luminescent orange. The same unstoppable rage I'd experienced fighting Peter once more consumed me, driving me to beat the Elder Thing to death. I once more heard the music of Azathoth's court. This time I embraced it.
You have no idea what you've destroyed,
I shouted, hearing the sound of my weapon bash against its head.
One of the last true humans.
It was an insane comment, and in all likelihood the Elder Thing had no idea what I was saying. Still, it made me feel better. By the end of my penultimate attack, its upper appendages were a brutalized mass of fluids and gore as I saw its eye-like sensory stalks look at me. Lifting my weapon up a final time, I prepared to crush the monster's head in and end its life. The music in my head reached a crescendo, signaling it was time to send the beast to whatever hell awaited it.
That was when I heard a voice in my head, a telepathic plea that sounded almost human despite its peculiar stereo-like quality. Its words were the only things that might stay my hand from finishing it off.
Please don't harm the children.
What? The otherworldly music in my head grew louder, as if compelling me to crush the other thing's upper torso despite the other thing's dying plea. Forcing myself to resist the urge, I managed to drive out the accursed music. It took every ounce of my willpower. I dearly wanted to kill the beast and avenge Richard's death, but I did it. I would not become a man who orphaned children if I could help it. Stopping the descent of my weapon just a few feet above its head, I asked,
"What did you say?"
The other thing moved up one of its protruding stalks, possibly what passed for its eyes. What it said next with its telepathic speech sounded almost surprised.
"You can understand me? Impossible. Humans do not have the mental capacity to understand the language of the elder race."
I lifted my weapon again, holding it over the tentacles which existed in place of its face.
"Think again."
God, I wanted to kill it. Taking several deep breaths, I managed to calm myself, albeit barely. If the creature showed any sign of treachery, I vowed to smash it to a gory pulp of alien goo, children or not. One of its outgrowths raised in an almost pleading gesture.
"I apologize. I have not seen any of your species since the dying days of my people's civilization, when the southern continent dwellers worshipped the snake god Yig-Seth, and the northerner continent dwellers prayed at the altar of Krom-Kruach."
I aimed my makeshift club at its tentacles, uncaring about the creature's reminiscences.
"You said you had children?"
It was ridiculous to pull back now. Nothing this thing said could change the fact it had murdered Richard, one of the few people in my life I called friend. Yet I couldn't bring myself to kill the beast if it was just trying to protect its offspring. Enough sympathy existed within me to understand that was an urge that united all races.
At least I hope it did.
"As your race defines them, yes. You are not here to destroy my clan's egg clutch?"
The elder thing said, its telepathic voice causing me as much of a headache as my recent memory flashes.
"No."
"I am sorry, I presumed you were with the necromancer."
The other thing had no emotions which could be read on its non-existent face, yet I guessed it was probably feeling guilty. Probably. Its telepathic voice lacked the inflections that would have told me for sure. Nevertheless, I listened as it continued to speak.
"I bear your species no harm, yet one member of it has transcended the limitations you possess. He has destroyed several other Dreamlands clans, seizing their technology and homesteads. I assumed you were his agent."
"No, his enemy."
I put my weapon down, though still kept my grip tightly around its handle. "I know we invaded your home, but we came in peace. We only wanted to ask for your help." I doubted elder things possessed the capacity to appreciate irony or experience bitterness at the vagaries of fate. Yet if the aliens had an equivalent, I suspected it would be feeling them.
"I will assist you in any way possible, if only for the fact you are a highly dangerous organism and I wish you out of my domain."
It was almost enough to make me laugh. This whole thing was absurd, tragically, horrifically absurd.
"Believe me, I don't want to be here any more than you do."
"I somehow doubt that."
The being continued to twitch on the ground, still badly wounded from my attack. Unlike other entities I'd encountered, apparently elder things didn't regenerate.
"Since you can communicate, I would like to know how you broke the proportion warping effect we worked around our hatchery. It should have made the tower impossibly formidable to look upon."
I bit my lip. It had all been an illusion. Richard would have found that funny.
"Luck, I guess."
"That is an insufficient answer," the creature responded.
Its cold and clinical manner made me want to kill it. Any earlier sympathy largely evaporated.
"I saw through it."
My grip tightened around the barrel of my gun. I desperately wanted to believe Richard was still alive, that he'd just woken up when his astral self had been killed. But something told me that wasn't the case. He was dead, and it was my fault, all because of my insane need to find out more about my last mission. Staring at the creature, I hoped against hope there was some arcane magical solution for what had just occurred.
"Can you raise my friend back from the dead?"
The elder thing twitched, a second before responding.
"Resuscitation of non-elder race life forms does not fall within my area of expertise, no."
"No, of course not. That would have been too easy."
I pulled out a spare ammunition magazine, one I imagined was in my pocket before it appeared. I then placed it in my weapons chamber. It was an experiment to see if I could still bend reality, the size of the tower being an illusion aside. So far, so good. Holding the weapon up to its head, I put my finger on the trigger and contemplated just sending the Elder Thing to whatever afterlife awaited plant-sea creature hybrid aliens. I then asked, "Can you remove a spell?" The creature was clearly distressed, and I wondered if it was scared. Could Elder Things even feel fear? If they could, I was glad. I would hate this thing forever for killing Richard. Still, I needed it to finish my mission. That was the only way I could sort through my grief right now. Noticing it was hesitating, I put the gun straight to where I guessed its central nervous system laid. "Answer me." "I do not know what a spell is," the Elder Thing finally admitted. "Your mental projections regarding them just come off as nonsensical, irrational imagery." "It's a connection between me and something called Nyarlathotep." I kept the gun aimed at it, fully intending to kill it if it couldn't help. "It is a god if you know what that is." Would it be murder? Probably, but murder was something you became used to in the Wasteland. I'd never executed someone without good cause before, but the death of my friend was pretty damn good cause in my mind, mistake on the Elder Thing's part or not. "Ah, I am familiar with the Dreamland's personifications of the universe's laws." The Elder Thing moved its tendril over my chest. "Strange, this seems to weave in and out of your body." "Just break it." "You're not entirely divorced from this power. If I remove it, it will not change the fact you are not entirely dissimilar to my race, at least mentally," the Elder Thing said. "I have no idea what that means." "I am unsurprised. Despite your ignorance, you may be quite useful to my people, especially if this Nyarlathotep is the same being we call Katharltak." The Elder Thing seemed almost cocky. "You are evolved on a sturdier level than the humans, I recall. You are different from them on a fundamental level." "I'm human, just human." I didn't like the way this conversation was going. "Yes and no, which is why you are fascinating to me." The Elder Thing forced its presence against my mind. A stinging pain passed over me, one which threatened to kill me. For a moment, I thought that was the creature's intention, but its presence was violently thrown out of my mind as if my brain was defending itself. "It is done." The creature sounded almost impressed. "I am surprised your mind could handle my psychic surgery." I tried to push down my suspicion of the creature. "Gee, thanks. Will the person I was connected to recover now?" "Perhaps," it responded. The other thing was really starting to get on my nerves. I then told it, "There's one more thing I want you to do." "Of course." The other thing seemed almost annoyed. "Humans always require more. You are not that removed from the primates we elevated you from." I was actually pleased the Elder Thing stooped to the level of petty insults. It showed the creature wasn't so far removed from humanity. "I'm also missing memories, memories that would help me fight the necromancer you fear." The Elder Thing lifted one of his outgrowths, the thing wiggling a bit in the air. If Elder Things had an equivalent of amused disbelief, it was showing it. "The necromancer is not remotely human, not anymore. It is close to a great old one, like the human who became one before named Carter." Normally I would have asked more about a human becoming a great old one, but I needed to remain focused on my objective. I can kill him. I have to. I just need to have my missing memories back so I can know what he did to me. The Elder Thing moved another one of its tendrils over me, leaving a slimy trail up the front of my uniform. "Your collection of neurons is not a difficult pattern to follow, unusual as it may be, nor is it difficult to correct the disrupted pathways." Almost immediately, I felt its terrible psychic presence once more force itself into my brain. This time, the agonizing pain was located squarely in my mind. I struggled to hold on to my rifle, slowly falling back a few steps while my vision blurred. "I don't remember anything yet." "The damage will take several more of your minutes to heal." The Elder Thing seemed to grow slightly more confident. "Do not struggle. We do not intend to kill you. You are an anomaly which must be studied. It will assist my species in its survival while also aiding yours in its. This is a noble cause and should not take more than 1,700 cycles." I realized what the Elder Thing was talking about seconds later. Two more of its race stepped forth through the doorway before me, both wielding the same crystalline rods which the first had used to kill Richard. They were lumbering forward, moving at an extremely slow pace, which was, nevertheless, menacing. They looked almost like demons with tentacles for heads, drawing on the most primordial racial fears of humanity. "Son of a bitch," I said, falling back down the stairs as I aimed my assault rifle straight at the fallen Elder Thing's upper body. Firing, I watched its brain matter equivalent splatter across the steps. It wasn't going to help me survive, but it felt good to avenge Richard's death. The remaining Elder Things proceeded to fire a series of luminescent green globes at my feet. The blasts exploded on the stairs beneath me, sending fragments of stone and dust up into my face. Falling down the staircase, I rolled out of the way of their next attack. From the erratic nature of their blasts, I determined the Elder Things were not trying to kill, but instead disable me, probably for the sick experiments the dead one had spoken of. I wasn't about to let that happen. Climbing to my feet as another blast exploded behind me, I made a break for the door. The creatures continued their assault, forcing me to duck and dodge like I was playing football. Finally reaching the bottom of the staircase, I felt my leg burning from pieces of stone shards embedded in them. Staring down at the wound, I saw it was bleeding badly. Great. Continuing to shamble down the hall, I finally exited into the dreamlands outside. There, the sky had once more filled with disturbing, unnatural storm clouds. Instead of their earlier familiar faces, they took the form of hideous, malformed monsters, things which resembled combinations of Elder Things, Great Old Ones, and humans. The rain pouring down from them had also changed, becoming a mixture of blood and gory chunks of flesh.
"Never trust an EBE," I coughed.
Now drenched in blood, I threw myself onto the ground and took up a defensive position. Holding my assault rifle in hand, I waited for the Elder Things to burst through. My rifle had been almost useless against the first of their kind, and I privately wished I had a bazooka. Amazingly, the heavy assault rifle began to morph and twist in my hands. Almost like it was clay-shaped by a child's hands, the weapon slowly became a bazooka. I concentrated and focused my will, transforming it into a specific weapon. Not a bazooka, but something packing a bit more punch, a P-21 rocket launcher. The P-21 was the only post-rising anti-EBE ballistic weapon ever created, and it was damned good at its job. "I'm starting to like the Dreamlands," I grinned, watching the two Elder Things through the open doorway. The infinite tower was no longer remotely infinite, now merely the size of a moderately tall skyscraper. Firing my rocket launcher, the rocket sailed between them and exploded into the center of the hallway. For a brief moment, I thought they were both dead, their bodies consumed by the fire I'd created. It would have been a fitting funeral pyre for Richard, a way to celebrate his life by killing more of the beings who had taken it. Unfortunately, my predictions of victory were premature, as neither of them had perished. Like the mythical phoenix, both emerged from the tower doorway, covered in fire and looking decidedly pissed off. "Damn it," I muttered, imagining another round for my rocket launcher. It was a hard and exacting process, conjuring things from nothing in the dreamlands. Yet the creatures weren't going to wait, and I struggled to do it anyway. Letting forth an unearthly and terrifying roar, like nothing ever produced on this earth, the Elder Things smashed through the tower's doorway and flew into the bloody rain with their crystal rods raised. That was when I got a good look at them, the flames around them dying out. The monsters weren't completely unharmed. Their skins were covered in a gray, flaky film that might have been the outer flesh seared by the force of my explosion. At least I had managed to wound them. "Shit," I muttered, watching the rocket I'd been conjuring twist to become unusable dream stuff. I'd let my attention wander, and it had ruined the entire effect, giving the monsters time to attack. "This is gonna hurt." Two spiraling globes of energy shot forth and exploded at the base of my feet. The detonation was like a mine going off beneath me, throwing me in the air along with a pile of dirt. When my body struck the ground, I couldn't hear a thing through the ringing of my ears and the shaking of my body. In all likelihood, I was suffering numerous internal injuries that would claim my life without proper medical attention. That is, if my legs hadn't been completely blown off by the blast. I couldn't tell at my current vantage. I struggled as I reached over for the rocket launcher. Despite my hands feeling like they weighed 100 pounds, I tried desperately to reach for it. It was several feet away, though, and I had to start pulling myself over towards it. The weapon was unloaded, but I could just dream up ammunition. I wasn't going to go out with a fight, maimed or not. That was when the sky opened up and lightning poured down upon both. Not just a single bolt of it, but a storm of electricity, hundreds of bolts hitting them one after the other. The terrible torrent didn't stop until both were little more than charred, ashen shells of their former selves. The Elder Things had no skeletons, per se, but the ruined interiors were similar enough that it gave me a little thrill. They were dead. There was no question about it. The question was, how? My answer came in the form of a silver-tipped cane pressing against the top of my abdomen.
Ah, John, fancy seeing you here. I knew you would eventually make your way into the Dreamlands, but in the company of Elder Things? Tisk, tisk. You should have told me you shared my passion for destroying the beasts. We could have arranged a hunt.
I recognized the voice. Alan Ward had arrived. Chapter 17. Staring upwards, I saw the figure of Alan Ward in all his demented glory. He stood over me, leaning on a silver-handled walking stick. The tip of the walking stick was shaped like an idol of Cthulhu. The disgusting octopi-headed demon dragon thing possessed ruby eyes which seemed to glow with an unholy inner fire. He was dressed in an old pre-rising black business suit, which seemed pristine despite being at least a century old. Around his neck hung a strange necklace, resembling a large warped starfish in a circle with an eye over it. I was so badly shaken by my experience that it took me a few seconds to realize it was the Elder Sign. Alan Ward had created his own syncretic religion, combining worship of the Elder Gods and Cthulhu, despite how the two were usually depicted as opposed.
Ward, I hissed through ragged breaths. More than ever, I wished I still had my rocket launcher. Putting a missile straight up his ass would have pleased me immensely.
That's my name, yes, Ward said, pulling forth a sword from the end of his walking stick. It was long and made of a moon-colored metal that I could not identify.
I'm sorry it's come to this, John, but you've made a rather expansive mess.
You killed them. You killed my friends, tortured me, kidnapped children, and murdered more.
I spit out blood from where my lip had busted open. I tried to spit in his face, but the saliva barely left my mouth as I struggled to move. I wanted desperately to strike out at the man, yet I had expended every last ounce of my strength fighting the Elder Things. I had nothing more to give, not even when faced with my squadron's killer.
Oh, don't act like that, Ward said, taking aim with his blade. I bear you no ill will. However, there are always winners and losers in these things. That's assuming you even remember anything about our last fight. I'm afraid I left you a bit banged up after our last encounter.
Oh, lovely. He decided to be chatty.
Go to hell.
Ward tightly clutched his hands around his sword's handle. There's no such place, John. The true gods care nothing about sin or redemption. Only humans do, and we are as insignificant as rays of light caught in a black hole's gravity. I hope your next life proves more illuminating to the universe's truth.
I'm going to kill you, I said.
It was an irrational thing to say, I knew, but I said it anyway. Somehow, against all odds, I had faith it was not going to end this way. I had to believe it. Otherwise, all of this had been for nothing.
I sincerely doubt that.
Ward moved his sword directly over my heart. In that moment, I realized I had to play on his arrogance. I wanted to live, and I needed to buy time to avenge my squadron. For that, I was willing to do anything. Watching him raise the sword to strike, I had the dubious honor of regaining my lost memories. The Elder Thing's psychic surgery finally took hold, restoring what I'd forgotten just as I was about to die. Just my luck, I was going to remember everything I needed to know to kill Dr. Ward when he was about to kill me. One moment I was seeing the necromancer's blade descend, the next I was once more his prisoner. I was naked, strapped to a vertical metal table and inside a chamber of horrors. To call it a laboratory was stretching the definition. Surrounding me were strange, humming Elder Thing devices, human-constructed machines straight from the imagination of Nikola Tesla, and freakish, half-dissected monsters resting on metal trays. Instead of a sterile environment, the walls were made of stone. Really, the place resembled where Dr. Frankenstein created his monster more than anything else. Across from me was the equally naked form of Jessica. She was breathing heavily, having apparently woken before me. My thoughts regarding her were protective, worrying about the kind of treatment a woman might receive at the hands of the Black Cathedral's insane residents. It was a pointless worry. There was nothing I could do to prevent her assault. Yet I would have gladly died a horrible death if it meant sparing her from such pain. Not that it was likely I'd get the chance. In all likelihood, we'd both be executed after extended torture. It was how things worked in the wasteland. Jessica, are you? I hesitated before asking more. All right seemed like a tremendously stupid thing to ask. For now, Captain, Jessica said before taking several deep breaths. I haven't been tortured, if that's what you mean. I breathed a silent prayer of thanks. I suppose we can be grateful for that, at least. Grateful? Jessica asked. We'll get out of this, Jessica, I promise. I wasn't sure if it was true, but I would damn well try to make it so. How long have you been up?
A few minutes, she said, blinking, looking ready to laugh at the absurdity.
One of the cultists told me they were going to let us watch some movies until Dr. Ward is ready to see us. I blinked at her. What? A pair of Alan Wards reanimated walked into the room, carrying a projector and a collapsible screen under their arms. I almost vomited when I realized they were Stevens and Jimmy, or what was left of them. Stevens's body had been stitched back together, metal grafts visibly sticking out of his shoulders and legs. Jimmy, on the other hand, possessed neither eyes nor tongue. Where those things should have been, the holes were sewn up in a grim mockery of a human being. The pair carried out their labor wordlessly, reacting to neither Jessica nor me until they finished. Turning on the movie projector, the two reanimated soldiers bowed before departing.
The word sick doesn't even begin to cover this, does it?
Jessica said, looking at them.
No, I said. It doesn't.
The next 6 hours were spent watching. I cannot really describe this without sounding deranged, even to myself. Pre-rising horror films. The incongruity of watching moving pictures in such a grotesque environment may strike a person blackly humorous. Reliving my memories, I briefly had enough self-awareness to wish I could give a gallows laugh. I laughed at the start of the first film, screamed obscenities throughout the whole of the second film, and then silently watched the third for lack of anything better to do. We were in the hands of a madman, and I was unable to do anything about it. As the third movie reel finally ended, I heard a rustling coming up from a nearby stairwell. Stepping into the room was Dr. Alan Ward, now dressed as an old earth gardener with a white apron over plain work clothes. In his left hand, he held a trough that he was cleaning dirt off with his fingers.
I'm terribly sorry for making you late, but you did catch me at a somewhat bad time. The mandragora strains I'm cultivating in my gardens are nearly ripe. The screams they unleash when they are pulled are enough to kill a full-grown man at 80 paces.
He merrily waved his trough at us.
I hope you have not been too uncomfortable.
Jessica proceeded to unleash a torrent of profanity with such speed and hatred it would take several minutes to recite all of the insults she hurled at Dr. Ward, despite taking no more than 35 seconds to say them all. I did not consider all of the things she accused him of being to be insults, especially regarding his sexuality and race, but the intent was clear. The final bits were especially ironic, given some of the insults.
Evil, murdering Nazi piece of shit!
Alan Ward blinked behind his bifocals, briefly pausing to wipe some spittle off the end of them.
My dear, the elder sign and my appreciation for their efficiency aside, I'm not the one who hails from a purity-obsessed fascist state. The only Nazis present, I fear, are you and Mr. Booth. I, by contrast, am a more cosmopolitan sort, open to any and all perversities and species provided they amuse me.
I would have argued with Alan Ward, if only because New Arkham did not discriminate on race, but he preempted any discussion by snapping his fingers. Instantly, Jessica started to bleed from her nose, convulse violently, and then pass out. It was as if he had the power to control her body with his mind.
That was unnecessary.
I swallowed my anger and decided to interact with him on a rational level. I had dealt with several psychopaths before, mostly petty warlords and cult leaders. The key to successful negotiation was making sure you treated them as if they weren't the monstrous little egomaniacs they were. Necessity is in the eye of the beholder. Ward spread out his hands, smiling. Manners are always important. Treating him as a rational human being was going to be more difficult than I thought. That's not what I meant. I know. Don't worry, she won't die. I have great plans for you both, and neither involves your deaths. Alan Ward removed his apron and placed his trough on a nearby table. What do you want? I asked, trying to maintain my decorum in the face of my squadron's murderer. You still think this is a conversation, don't you? Ward looked at me for several seconds, apparently trying to determine if I was joking. Oh, John, I'd forgotten how amusing you could be. I'm centuries old and you're easily the most interesting person I've ever met, exempting Randolph Carter. The Alan Ward I knew was a man of honor. He wouldn't be party to the taking of children. I was flattering him now. He'd killed friends, and no matter our past relationship, the moment I was free, I would kill him for it. You didn't know me very well then, Ward said, sighing. I've always been willing to do whatever it takes to save humanity. Jessica interrupted my attempts to talk him down. Save humanity? Is that what you call those things out there? You animated a bunch of corpses to kill us. You killed our squad. You killed our friends. I've killed many members of the R&D Rangers, although you probably don't realize it, and hundreds of remnant citizens besides. I control much of the wildlife outside of New Arkham, the cults as well. What started as a disaffected group of mutants and savages living in ruins, I have forged into an empire. The color was summoned by me, and I brought down other horrors as well. Jessica's eyes blazed with hate. I closed my eyes. I don't believe you. No one can control the horrors of the wasteland. We are subject to it, not its masters. In a world where there are few gods who care for us but many who don't, the universe is as cruel to the great old ones as it is humanity. Ward closed his eyes. New Arkham is irrelevant to my activities, but I needed test subjects and they were a ready source. I'm sorry it's come to this, but we're all expendable in the grand scheme of things. I abandon any pretense of negotiation. You're a sick man, Ward. What is your plan anyway? Do you intend to make your own little empire out here, raise all these children to worship you as a god? Close enough, Ward said, opening his eyes. Humanity is a sick, dying, weak species. The Elder Things envy our will to survive, but we are on the road to oblivion. We need a new humanity to rise from the ashes, and I have created it. It will not be a mankind which carries the failures of the old race, though. I want to raise the better half of man to godhood, not its monkey side. You intend to experiment on these children, I said in a hushed whisper. Turn them into something like the Deep Ones. Martha had been right. Don't be ridiculous, John. I've been experimenting since before the great old ones rose. In previous lives, I studied alchemy and necromancy in hopes of finding ways to overcome death. I learned the secret to taking over the bodies of my descendants before mankind was performing open-heart surgery. Only now, with the technology of the Elder Things, have I perfected my science. He shook his fist in the air, his eyes gleaming. Do you understand what I'm saying? That you're crazy? Jessica said, not helping our situation. Ward ignored her and stared into my eyes. You know what I can achieve, John. You've seen my early work. Your current results are... what exactly? I couldn't help but ask. John! Jessica shouted, betrayed. The bowels of this temple are filled with the half-alive foul abominations my earlier failures created, but I have at last found perfection in the arcane sciences. The children I've taken will eat of the fruits of my labors, becoming as eternal and undying as the old ones. And they'll still be human? More or less, yes. Ward snorted in derision at my questioning look. Once I have fostered my children to the next stage in our race's evolution, we will take to the stars through the dreamlands and bring forth a world where we can live in peace. A part of me wanted to believe he could do it, that there was a terrible possible hope for humanity to survive. In the end, I couldn't bring myself to accept humanity had a future.
You can't just change the nature of humanity. As if there was something special about our race of upjumped chimps, Ward said. Jessica continued swearing at him, trying to gain his attention and promising violence should she get free. Leave me out of it, I said. I won't help you, willingly or otherwise. Not even immortality and immunity to disease can persuade you. Ward crossed his arms, raising an eyebrow. No. Then I fear I have to take what benefit of your body I can. If you will not be my body, you will be spare parts. Ward began unbuttoning his shirt. You see, the unfortunate side effect of magic is that every use of it exposes you to potential catastrophic side effects. I coined the term MRADs to draw a parallel to nuclear radiation. The results, however, are arguably worse. I began pulling against my bands, weakening them, while Ward exposed his bare chest. All across his chest were mouths, mouths with sharpened inhuman teeth and tongues, wiggling, slithering tongues. In between those inhuman maws were eyes, both human and inhuman, by the hundreds. They blinked and stared at me, clearly aware and sapient as any eyes on a human face. I was almost too shocked to continue my plan, the sight of his disgusting mutations freezing me in place. My God! I almost vomited then and there. What are you? A work in progress, Ward said softly. He slowly began buttoning up his shirt, flicking one of the long pointed tongues sticking out towards me. Once I become like the great old ones, my current state will cease to be an issue, but I do not want to take any chances. I was almost ready. I could feel the restraints beginning to buckle. Even so, I stuttered with fear. I hadn't reacted like this since I was a child. I don't see how this applies to me. Your slut of a mother may well have conceived you with my seed. It's a long shot, but my current form isn't capable of breeding a new body should this one fail. I like to hedge my bets, Ward said, reaching over to pat me on the cheek. Do you understand? It was the aspersions on my mother's character which gave me the strength to shatter my bonds. The leather straps around my wrist, chest, and legs snapped in quick succession before the mad sorcerer scientist's astonished eyes. Before he could bring up a spell to defend himself, I socked him across the jaw with more force than I'd ever struck a man. Dr. Ward possessed power equivalent to the gods, rivaling the sorcerers of old Earth myth like Merlin or Ibon, yet he was still human. Kicking him in the hideous mutant mouths growing out of his chest, I shattered several of their teeth before grabbing a nearby beaker of glowing fluid and smashing it against his face. Whatever bizarre alchemical substances it contained, it burned the demonic doctor's face like acid. As he screamed, I lifted him high in the air above my head and hurled him into some nearby electrified machinery. A titanic explosion followed with his body lying in the rubble of the machine's remains, tortured and shocked. Some sort of evil god must have been on his side, however, because he continued to breathe. Searching for some sort of weapon to crush the man's skull and end his evil reign of terror, I found a thick steel rod that I lifted over my head. Dr. Ward could do nothing to stop me, having been knocked unconscious by my savage attack. Goodbye, doctor, I said with a smile on my lips. It's been a pleasure. My sense of victory was premature. No sooner was I bringing down the rod than someone struck me across the back of the head with a blunt instrument. Hitting the ground hard, my vision became woozy as I glanced over my shoulder at the figure behind me. It was Peter Goodhill, the coward who'd betrayed Gamma Squadron and whom I'd failed to kill in our last encounter. Peter was not yet covered in his Dunwich tattoos, instead wearing military fatigues and a green beret affixed with the Elder sign. In his hands was a wooden baseball bat covered in my blood. Traitor! I coughed, staring up at him. Shut up, Peter replied, bringing his boot down on my face. Once more I hit the ground unconscious. This was getting to be a bad habit. Chapter 18. For a brief moment, I was aware of my present state in my flashback.
The discovery that Peter Goodhill was a servant of Ward made me think about my encounter with him in Richard's garage. Peter working for the Necromancer explained a great deal, from his unusual friendliness to why he'd suddenly decided to join the Dunwich after a post-desertion career of self-serving behavior. Peter was nothing more than a plant by the old sorcerer scientist. Peter was a means for Ward to gain information on any plots the Dunwich might be formulating against him. Any guilt I felt towards nearly beating Peter to death evaporated, replaced only by the regret that I did not finish the job. I had precious little time to think on the revelation because my memories resumed with a feverish dreamlike quality. I remembered being punished for my almost successful assassination of the insane scientist. Dr. Ward was a master of inflicting ungodly pain upon a human body. When he was not doing so, bizarre medical tests involving injections and spell work were performed. I had read of encounters with Greys and the Plutonium Mygo species, where men were abducted and subjected to traumatizing scientific experiments. Those stories were the closest thing I could think of to compare my experience to. Blessedly, Ward feared me so much that he kept me doped up on a cocktail of drugs so strong I could barely feel much of what I endured. There were other things, too, things I could barely recall because Ward began to experiment with possession. Scattered images filled my head of elaborate gladiator contests, battles where he wore my body like a suit, using golden revolvers to fight various monsters of his own creation. I vaguely recall Jessica fighting in these contests as well, something which only increased my hatred of Ward. I took no pleasure in the victories I remembered. Each one signaled the doctor gaining a greater control over my form. It was close to 8 days before I regained control of my body. It took that long for the drugs to pass from my system and to recover enough mental strength to drive Ward's presence from my mind. I could not say for certain what gave me the willpower to perform this feat. I believe, in part, it had to do with my desire to protect my family and see again those I loved. Also was my care for my surviving squad mate, Jessica, and the knowledge a terrible fate awaited her were I not to break free. When it finally happened, a primordial scream escaped my lungs, filling the room. Ah! A female voice whispered in my ear. It's all right, John, I'm here. I did not immediately look to the source, instead taking in the chamber around me. I was in a dungeon, a genuine one, unlike the laboratory I'd been imprisoned in before. The room was surprisingly spacious, albeit filthy. I was in a single large chamber with a row of iron bars separating it from rows of similar chambers outside. Surrounding me were several ancient corpses, fossilized by the epochs of time and magical radiation. Given the Elder Things had no reason to keep human prisoners, this place had probably once housed slaves. There was a single guard standing in front of the bars, a debased-looking Cthulhu cultist who had tattooed himself with hundreds of elder signs. He was not a particularly formidable-looking fellow, looking somewhat diseased and wretched. Given Ward had spent the past week brainwashing and drugging me, he'd probably thought it unnecessary to provide someone more skilled. Fool. I shook my head and turned to look at the woman behind me. Jessica?
Yes, Captain, it's me.
I saw she was dressed in rather ridiculous attire. Covering her form was tight-fitting cowgirl attire. It was like none of the practical clothing worn by the Wastelanders outside of New Arkham, but more like something you'd see in pre-rising art. Jessica, why are you dressed like that? Ward made us dress in these outfits when he had us fight for his cultist's amusement. She looked as disgusted as I felt confused.
I'm just glad he hasn't forced us to do anything else.
Us? I noticed I was wearing a male variant of the exact same thing. I don't believe it.
I wish I still had this option, Jessica huffed before slowly helping me to my feet. Did you actually know this guy?
He was my mentor for a few years back when I thought I still might be a scientist.
Damn,
Jessica replied, patting me on the back.
I take it your course wasn't crazy-ass experiments?
No. I leaned up to whisper in her ear. Have you any idea how to get out of this place?
There's a transport garage nearby, Jessica whispered back. The problem is this place is crawling with cultists and weird-ass monsters. I swear I think Ward's inner circle is composed of vampires.
I bit my lip, looking at her skeptically. Vampires don't exist, Jessica.
Have you seen any?
She asked, raising an eyebrow. No, I sighed. I haven't.
Then don't contradict me.
Jessica wrinkled her nose, smiling. It was a sad smile, though.
I miss Jimmy, Garcia, and Parker. Stevens, too.
I miss them all as well. I took a deep breath and stood up. I looked at her, taking in her soft features and missing my wife more than ever. Though we were estranged, I still thought of her every day.
Is there anything else I should worry about?
Ward has a dragon?
I said, speaking a little louder than I should have been. Jessica, you know how much I hate to agree with Stevens, but that's just ridiculous. There's no such thing.
I've heard it, John, Jessica hissed under her breath. It doesn't roar so much as make 1,000 terrible noises all at once. The thing sounds like the pipe organ from hell, but it's real. The thing is big, nasty, and slithering down beneath us. A few times I felt the whole cathedral shake.
I knew better than to contradict Jessica. She might be prone to the occasional flight of fancy, but if she said she heard something, then I believed her. I didn't believe in dragons, but there were aliens undoubtedly as large and dangerous. All right, there's a dragon.
Thank you. Jessica breathed a sigh of relief. I'm glad you believe me. There were times I was sure I was going mad. The sounds it makes, they scare me in ways that Dr. Ward and his experiments can't even begin to compare to.
I placed my hand on Jessica's arm, barely resisting the urge to embrace her. Right now, we needed to work together to get out of this. Years of training together had made us like a pair of twins, in tune and aware of each other's surroundings. We could get through this. I think we need to use Plan 23 to get out of here. She nodded and asked,
What's Plan 23?
You'll figure it out when you see it, I said, giving her a half-hearted smile. Clutching my stomach, I raised a hand.
Guard, I think I'm sick. Oh God, I'm gonna throw up.
The guard turned to look at me. Idiot, I don't think anyone has ever fallen for that in there. That was when Jessica broke a leg bone across her knee and jabbed the jagged edge of the larger piece into the left eye of the Cthulhu cultist. He was dead before he hit the ground.
Is this what you had in mind?
Jessica said, walking over to the corpse.
'Cause if you actually intended him to come in to help, I've lost all respect for you.
It proceeded more or less how I pictured it in my head. Never underestimate the power of a good distraction. I smiled, waiting for her to unlock the door. Our other option was for you to try and seduce our guard before I overpowered him. Jessica snorted, shaking her head.
That plan is only slightly better than the stomach virus one.
We could have done it the other way if he was so inclined, I said, searching the body of the deceased cultist. There I found a crude powder pistol. It was better than nothing, though not by much. We now have to proceed to that transport garage, hopefully arming ourselves. We'll go in silently and deadly. Hopefully we can convince the Council of Leaders this place is a threat.
Oh, they'll bomb the place to the ground, I'm sure of that. Never have I been more grateful the Council is a bunch of paranoid old egomaniacs,
Jessica said, laughing. Let's go, Captain.
Affirmative.
The interior of the Black Cathedral was still stunning to travel through, even with a sense of fear and unnaturalness that clung to its alien architecture. The elder things, who I knew almost nothing of back then, didn't strike me as the most religious of people, but they had constructed a vast temple to their otherworldly gods. Everything was built to many times the size of humans, despite the elder things being only twice the size of humans. There was a sense of grandiosity largely lacking from human design. I had to admire them, even knowing what sort of cruel, logic-driven beings they were.
I'm not seeing much of the locals,
Jessica said, clinging close as we moved from hallway to hallway.
Do you think it's a trap?
Traps are for people who are not completely in your power, I said. Jessica grimaced.
Right.
I gestured for her to be quiet and moved into a nearby passageway as a group of Cthulhu cultists came around the corner. They were, like the others we'd killed, dressed in scavenged attire and outlandish tattoos. It made me wonder what Dr. Ward had been thinking recruiting them. All of them were carrying small arms, however, which made their elimination vital. Signaling Jessica to stay quiet, I counted down from 3 as they passed by. When we hit 0, the both of us moved behind the 2 closest to snap their necks. Jessica had difficulty with hers, but still disabled him within seconds. It left only a single short red-haired cultist wearing a pair of glasses. He was also conspicuously wearing a set of flamethrower canisters on his back.
For great Cthulhu!
A battle cry he started before I stabbed in the eye with the same bone Jessica had used to kill our jailer.
Why do they always shout before they fire?
Jessica said, arming herself with the guns on the ground.
The whole point of a good battle cry is that it should be done while you're attacking.
I don't think logic is the main concern of these people. Make sure to stab each of the heads just in case. We don't want any more reanimated coming after us. I started removing the flamethrower from the deceased cultist's back.
You're actually going to use a flamethrower? You do realize those are horribly impractical weapons, right? Flamer ammunition is much superior.
Jessica's southern drawl slipped for a bit, revealing the new Arkham accent we all shared. You make do with what you have, Corporal, I said, checking the weapon for leaks. Are we close to where you saw the motor pool?
Motor pool may be giving it too much credit. These cultists don't seem to have too much in the way of vehicles. Still, we're not far. Only about 2 or 3 hallways, I think.
Jessica checked the magazines of both the semi-automatic pistols now in her hands. She then added,
Captain, I want to thank you.
Thank me? I asked, wondering if now was really the right time to get sentimental.
For distracting Dr. Ward. The entire time he was focused on torturing you, he wasn't able to do anything to me. I know that was your doing.
Jessica patted me on the arm, giving me a look of deep gratitude. I'm pretty sure that's not what happened, Corporal. I took a deep breath, testing the flamethrower by launching a brief burst of flame in front of us. I think I just annoyed him more than you. Nothing deliberate about it.
Well, I owe you one.
We owe each other. More times than I can count.
How about you let me buy you 20 or so rounds at the Radioactive Cowboy anyway? I'm starting to warm to Scrapyard's mud beer.
That makes one of us, but I'll take you up on your offer anyway. I'm sorry I got you into this.
You didn't.
I'm pretty sure I did.
If you're going to blame anyone, blame the Council of Leaders.
Jessica spit on the ground. They're the ones who let Ward loose in the desert. They're the ones who got my husband killed fighting a giant evil Crayola. Hell, they're the guys who keep sending us out against situations we have no idea how to handle.
We can't choose our leaders, I said.
So much for democracy, eh?
Jessica snorted. Yeah, I suppose so, I replied, realizing what I'd said. Just note, I've always got your back.
Always.
Jessica shook her head, unconsciously reaching for her hat that was no longer there.
God damn it, if I wasn't going to kill him for wasting Jimmy and Stevens, I'd kill him for taking my hat.
I was about to say we had bigger things to worry about when a noise threatened to split our eardrums. It was an explosion of noise so loud it echoed throughout the halls around us several times over. If this was the thing Jessica described as 1,000 terrible noises, then she was a master of understatement.
The dragon!
Jessica shouted, grabbing my arm.
John, we need to make a break for it.
I hesitated for a second, processing the sound. I think you're right, Corporal. At the end of the hall we'd just come from, I caught the sight of what was coming after us. If it didn't resemble a dragon, then it certainly possessed all of its intimidation value. I'd never seen such a malevolent-looking thing in my entire life. If I lived 1,000 years, I'd probably never see its like again. It was death incarnate. Rolling down from an archway on the floor above us, seeping over balconies and hallways, was a shapeless black creature composed of amorphous biomass. Much like the growths on Dr. Ward's chest, it was covered in mouths and eyes that had no business belonging on anything but a face. Its thousands of mouths spoke together, shouting nonsensical alien words in a mind-blasting chorus of pipe organ-like voices. Its protoplasmic body slithered and moved in ways no oozing thing should have been able to, smashing aside stone columns in its path as if they were a child's building blocks. One moment it moved like an amoeba. The next it possessed all the fluidity of water, and then it became solid as steel. The gigantic thing had not even begun to finish its entrance by the time it filled the entirety of the black cathedral halls behind us. I could see it was hundreds of feet long, more vast than any subway train or building I'd encountered in the wasteland's ruins. Given we had no idea how far the black cathedral really extended given its space-bending properties, the creature could have well been a mile in length or longer. Though I did not have a name for it, on the day I first encountered it, Abdul Al-Azred had written of the dreadful entity in the Necronomicon 1,000 years prior. He had given it the name Shoggoth. Eons ago, they had been creations of the Elder Things, only to destroy their vast supernatural kingdom, destroying all of the ancient beings' advanced technology and devouring the majority of them. They were made of matter culled from multiple dimensions and were immune to nearly all weapons. Had the Shoggoths been so inclined ages ago, they could have annihilated all other life forms on Earth.
Instead, they just kept to the ruins of the Elder Thing's once grand empire, gurgling obscene blasphemies and thinking whatever twisted thoughts Shoggoths did.
Run!
I shouted to Jessica, firing the flamethrower's juices onto the creature's form. The fire seemed only tickle it, dancing melodically alongside its tar-like form before being absorbed into its greater frame. Jessica didn't bother to run behind me, instead only tugging on the back of my shoulders before the Shoggoth formed a hammer-like shape within the folds of one of its tendrils, bringing it down towards me. Only Jessica's movement saved me from being crushed as the Elder Thing's treated stone shattered like thin glass before the force of its blow.
"How about you take your own advice?"
Jessica shouted in my ear, pulling on my arm. I ignored her insubordination again and took off running. Pulling off my shoulder straps, I tossed the useless flamethrower behind me, only to have it consumed by the hungry Shoggoth trailing behind me. The monstrous creature extended hundreds of tendrils forward, their movement almost like little baby chicks gestating within the folds of the monstrosity, ready to be fed by their mother. I could not help but think if Dr. Ward was nursing this creature to birth more of its kind, that he was even madder than I thought. Running as fast as our legs would allow, we were still only able to barely keep ahead of the seemingly endless tidal wave of blackness rushing behind us. When we arrived at the transport garage of the Black Cathedral, we were already beginning to feel winded, while our pursuer was only picking up speed. Unfortunately, the transport garage was no refuge. The place definitely had the transportation necessary to escape the cathedral. There were a vast collection of rebuilt cars, rusted oil drums containing probably the last substantive stockpile of oil left in the world, and a surprising number of weapon stockpiles. The exit, however, was sealed over with a huge pair of stone doors that would prevent any escape. There was also a collection of 24 cultists, all heavily armed, looking toward us as we ran in. The universe was mocking us.
"Shit!"
Jessica shouted. The Shoggoth poured into the chamber as I threw her to the ground, rolling across the floor out of the way of the cultist's line of fire.
"Truer words have never been spoken,"
I spoke to her, as the creature let forth another alien cry. Chapter 19. The Cthulhu cultists, despite their reverence for the great old ones, briefly regained their sanity long enough to realize the Shoggoth was not a god to be worshipped, but an enemy to be feared. In unison, they raised their weapons against the massive blob and opened fire, firing hundreds of rounds with their automatic weapons. One of them even had a P-17 rocket launcher, which used to fire straight into the Shoggoth's central mass. All of it was ineffective. Gunfire, grenades, and even P-17 rockets just were absorbed into the greater mass of the monster's body. The explosion seemed to cause the Shoggoth no stress at all. From what the Necronomicon described, the Elder Things had created this race to be one of the most highly adaptive organisms in the universe. It was not going to be stopped by anything as trivial as human weaponry. The Shoggoth retaliated faster than could have been imagined. Its tentacles reached out to crush, maim, devour, impale, or simply absorb whatever cultist it could lay its pseudopods on. To call it a battle would be stretching the definition. Instead, it resembled what my grandfather used to call an old-fashioned curb-stomping. "Never waste a good distraction," I muttered under my breath. Ignoring the plight of the dying cultists, I searched for something to open the massive stone doors at the end of the garage. A few yards away, I saw a large stone pillar topped with an oyster-like shell. Hoping fortune was with me for once, I saw glowing holographic lights appear above the shell as I approached. I hoped the strange Elder Thing machine was a control panel for the doors. The symbols were nonsensical, vaguely resembling a few I'd seen in Dr. Ward's lectures on pre-human species, but none of which had any real meaning to me.
"Too late for eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I guess," I muttered, before guessing what buttons to touch at random.
I was rewarded by the sound of the doors grinding open. The sun shined in through the doorways, revealing the extensive desert outside. If we could get to one of the vehicles, start it and peel out, then we were home free.
"Captain, it's Dunedin the cultist!"
Jessica shouted at the top of her lungs.
"Yeah, I guess that would happen,"
I called back, turning around to look for an appropriate vehicle to steal. I was rewarded by nearly being conked on the head by a flying human torso. Apparently the Shoggoth hadn't liked the taste of that particular cultist. The Shuggoth's terrible piping noise grew louder and louder as it proceeded to raise itself up to the entire height of the massive door we'd run through. Staring at it, I felt the first true and lasting fear I'd ever experienced in the presence of an EBE. The Shuggoth was magnificent, terrible, and godlike at once. It was every bit the dragon described by Jessica, a creature more powerful than anything I'd ever seen, excluding possibly the color. Having endured so much torture and pain at Dr. Ward's hands, my mind felt on the brink of breaking. Seeing it about to bear down on me for a brief moment, very brief, I was ready to let it kill me. It was one of the few moments of genuine despair I'd ever experienced in my life. In that moment, I understood how some wastelanders desired nothing more than to throw themselves into the mouths of the great old ones. Thankfully, I was with someone who was a little stronger-willed.
"Go to hell, bastard!"
Jessica shouted as she pulled a blessed Dunwich spear from one of the arsenal piles. She hurled the weapon into the Shuggoth with tremendous force, the tip penetrating one of the creature's many eyes. Almost immediately, the Shuggoth reared up, letting forth a cry that sounded distinctly like pain. "It can be hurt," I whispered, before staring at the arsenal piles around me. Amongst their contents, I saw the same golden revolvers Dr. Ward had used to fight his monstrous creations. Before the Shuggoth could recover from its minor wound, I scooped up the golden revolvers.
"Huh, well, that's good,"
Jessica said, more amazed than proud by her action. She saw me charge right at it.
"Captain, what are you doing?"
I was beyond listening to reason by that point. My momentary cowardice combined with the days of torture I'd endured, the loss of my squadron, and the very sanity-shaking nature of the Shuggoth itself was too much for me to handle. My mind broke and all rationality vanished, replaced with a blood rage fueled by anger and hatred. Lifting the two guns in my hands, I fired the relay and weapons through one of its tendrils, severing it cleanly. I could see the chambers for the revolvers, and they did not miss any rounds. The tentacle turned stark white and crumbled to pieces before I fired into another one. The battle fury filling my heart led me to shoot everything standing between me and the central biomass which stood before me. Somewhere deep in my ancestry, there was a long line of grim-faced berserkers and bloodthirsty gunslingers, which had waited generations to be unleashed. It was a romantic sentiment for what amounted to simply a fight-or-flight response gone horribly wrong, but I felt no pain or fear while I fought. The hefty recoil of the ancient gun should have slowed me down, but instead my attacks became as fast as the beating of a hummingbird's wings. The laws of physics were defied as adrenaline, madness, and the chemicals Dr. Ward pumped into my veins combined to form an inhuman strength equal to anything the legendary god-kings of old possessed. Despite the fury of my assault, the Shuggoth was not overwhelmed. Quite the contrary, it probably wouldn't have even noticed my attacks if not for the strange properties the revolvers possessed. Each of my shots struck a piece away from the monster. These pieces burned away in the air as if dissolved by acid, the strange sorcery woven into the folds of the gun's strange metal being antithetical to the science which had spawned the Shuggoth. Seeing my attacks were causing it harm, I threw myself further into the folds of the monstrous thing, watching it back away and allow me more room to deliver brutal blows to its bulbous flesh. In any sane world, I would have been killed within seconds. But this was not a sane world. I felt two of my ribs crack, followed by a kneecap, as the Shuggoth finally started retaliating, using its whip-like tendrils to land blows against my body. The attacks barely seemed to slow me down, my pain just giving me incentive to continue my relentless assault. Ancient berserkers would often die after they finished their blood rage, their wounds catching up with them after their fury ended. If that was going to be the case, I cared little because I only wanted to see the monster killed. All that was John Henry Booth, honorable soldier and family man, disappeared in the trauma of the man who had failed his squadron before suffering unspeakable tortures. In that moment, the Shuggoth became the embodiment of all the indignities inflicted upon me by Dr. Ward. The brutal swath of 100 or more bullets I put into the Shuggoth were not enough to kill it, though. Stun it? Perhaps. The creature backed away, shifting its terrible mass as I tore away more chunks of it with every blow. The Shuggoth did not remain troubled for long, though. Extending a half-dozen tentacles with thick, shark-toothed mouths, the Shuggoth bit into my legs and shoulders with a savage ferocity. I barely felt them before swinging my revolvers to shoot away more of its black tentacles. The pain was almost enough to shake me out of my fury, but I instead focused more on my desperate need to kill it. If I was going to die here, I intended to make it a glorious end. Blood poured from the wounds where I'd been bitten, slowing down my attacks despite my efforts. Still, I kept shooting into the side of the creature. A blow from one of the monstrous, oil-slick-looking tendrils landed against the side of my face and caused my vision to blur, possibly causing a concussion. I almost laughed, the mad, twisted sort of laugh the cultists routinely exhibited, life and death having no meaning in this battle. The Shuggoth's countless mouths opened, screaming a single word over and over, "Tekelili, Tekelili, Tekelili!" The creature proceeded to grab me by the legs with one of its tendrils, breaking my ankle with its crushing grip. Bringing my left pistol around once more, I shot myself free, even though it sent me spinning down to the hard stone surface 20 feet below. Slamming against the floor hard, I could barely move when the Shuggoth once more reared up its amoeba-esque form to attack. It was simply too powerful for any single human being to defeat, no matter how determined.
"Die already!"
I spit blood from my mouth, before struggling to my feet and spinning around like I was hurling a discus. Throwing my right revolver into the center of its biomass, I fell to the ground and collapsed. It was a final gesture of hate, brought up by a need to spit in the face of death before it struck me down.
"Tekelili, Tekelili, Tekelili,"
the Shuggoth shouted, almost sounding alarmed. Of course, it was impossible to read emotions into the strange piping noises it made. "Jessica," I muttered, my palms pressed against the stone surface beneath me. "I'm sorry." I wasn't able to see much once I did so, my body having no more left to give. Yet the creature didn't finish me off. The Shuggoth shuddered as the revolver sunk deep within the monstrous beast's folds. It burned away the top of its oozing, gelatinous form before slinking towards the ground. The Shuggoth's frame transformed itself into a white, powdery substance before exploding all over the walls.
"John!"
Jessica shouted, running up behind me.
"I don't believe it, you killed the dragon!"
I couldn't really hear her, my entire mind having collapsed in on itself. Dropping my remaining gun, I let loose the kind of mad laughter I'd seen 1,000 times on the broken prophets of the desert. It was the kind of mad chuckle of a person who had seen too much of what man was never meant to know, the sort of glee which would have probably sounded very similar to the cries given by Abdul Al-Azred himself when his villagers had stoned him to death. The Shuggoth's death left me unable to think or feel beyond the current situation. Destroying the thing should have liberated my mind, but it left me completely empty, unable to muster the willpower to try and escape. The fact the door was open meant nothing to a broken man, for I was lost in the recesses of my tattered sanity. Jessica had to heft me onto her shoulders, carry me to a car in order to drive us into the desert. The hand of Nyarlathotep, even now active inside my body, kept me alive, but it didn't heal my shattered sanity. That would take both time and vision quests, worked by Richard, while I was in my semi-comatose state. I had only the barest knowledge of what happened to my body during this time, though I could vaguely recall spells worked over me by Richard to draw together the broken parts of my consciousness. From there, I eventually awoke in the middle of the night and walked from Scrapyard to New Arkham. In my gibbering madness, I had one desire and one desire only, to return to my family. I crossed the desert from Scrapyard to New Arkham on foot, strangling a 9-foot-long desert snake on my way. A short reenactment of the most recent events of my life followed, opening with Mercury interrogating me in a chair before ending with Ward holding a blade over my chest. As the memories became present-time reality, I soaked in the sights and sounds around me. My body was lying bruised and battered on its back, ravaged by the Elder Thing's attacks. The sky was still raining blood around me, filling the ground around us with gore and crimson puddles. Shockingly, I was still alive, as reliving my lost memories had taken less than 1/2 a second. Ward finished bringing down his sword cane towards my heart.
"Good night, sweet prince."
Fueled by memories of torture at his hands, my eyes blazed. Chapter 20. Slapping my fingers against the edge of his weapon, I prevented it from impaling me while he struggled to force it down.
"Not today, doctor,"
I said, hate in my voice.
Dr. Ward stared at me, his eyes boring into mine as he shouted,
"You irritating little maggot! I tried to give you immortality and you threw it back in my face. You even killed my Shuggoth. Do you have any idea how rare those are?"
Spinning my leg around, I knocked his legs out from under him and ripped the sword from his hands. The blade spun in the air and landed in the gore nearby. Throwing myself on top of the insane scientist, I proceeded to deliver a repeated series of blows to the madman's face. Blood poured out from where I struck him, his teeth shattering from a particularly powerful blow. The brutalized doctor reached up for the Elder Sign amulet, hanging around his neck, but I grabbed it first and tore it away, tossing the talisman over my shoulder.
"I am going to squeeze the damned life out of you!"
I shouted at the top of my lungs, wrapping my fingers around his neck. Ward's face was already a blood-stained mess, his nose broken and several teeth missing from the force of my earlier blows. It was my hope to throttle the life out of him, letting him know exactly what was happening to him as he died. The necromancer was far from helpless, however. He raised his palm and I was thrown backwards with a blast of telekinetic force that sent me hurtling through the air. I ended up bouncing for 10 feet across the muddy, blood-soaked ground. Ward had a cocksure smile on his face as he said,
"John, surely you could have come up with something better than that. They don't really serve as appropriate famous last words for a man of your caliber."
Ward walked over to pick up his amulet as I reached into my jacket and pulled out the Dreamland's representation of the golden knife Martha had given me. Hurling the weapon forward, it pierced both the Elder Sign and the hand which held it. Letting forth a terrible scream, Dr. Ward stared down at the terrible wound he'd suffered. The Elder Sign promptly caught fire before exploding, leaving a burning, flaming stump in place of the man's hand.
"I prefer to let actions speak louder than words," I said, barely managing to stand up.
Hobbling, I took a deep breath as I prepared to finish off the psychopath, fully intending to kill him.
"If you die here, I'm pretty sure you'll die in the real world. Prepare to meet whatever gods you worship, Doctor."
Ward just stared at me, biting his lip and saying,
"Adieu, John Henry Booth. It has been amusing."
Rushing at him, I hoped he would be too disoriented to cast any more of his black magic. Unfortunately, I failed. I watched Dr. Ward's body transform into a flock of deformed crows, the myriad disgusting birds scattering to the four winds. I slid across the mud, watching my quarry escape into the night.
"Ward!"
I called out, sinking down into the bloody mud around me. The crimson rain continued to fall upon me, occasionally joined by organs and other disgusting hail from the surreal clouds above me. I could barely breathe, my body injured from the fragments of stone lodged within my knees. Though I could barely feel it, I also knew the Elder Things had scorched parts of my body with their crystalline rods. The wounds weren't lethal yet, but they would kill me without proper medical attention. Medical attention which was not exactly available in the Dreamlands. Knowing what happened to my squadron did nothing to alleviate the pain. It only heightened the outrageousness of the situation. Dr. Ward, my former professor, was going to mutilate hundreds of children to turn them into monsters. Struggling to get up, I failed, unable to move any farther. My body was battered, exhausted, and spent. I tried to wake up, to end the vision quest and return to my mortal body, only to find my mind was trapped within the confines of the Dreamlands. The Necronomicon might have contained some spell or ritual to free my mind, but I hadn't finished reading it. The book also lacked any astral reflection, left my orange pants back on Earth. Even attempts to will into existence exits failed, leaving me alone in the shadow of the Elder Things Tower. If there was a small mercy to the situation, it was that no more Elder Things came out to finish me off. The loss of two more of their brethren probably told them it was suicide to try and risk any more of their lives to retrieve my body. It was ironic, given I couldn't have resisted them in my present condition. Instead, I just lay there as minutes turned to hours, and I expected to die at any time. In the end, I regained enough force of will to make one last attempt to save my life. Knowing no one else would be able to stop Dr. Ward, I turned to forces I never expected to. Sorcery. I had to survive, though, to win justice for Jimmy and Stevens, to protect every single life Dr. Ward would take in his plan to transform the human race. Sticking the tips of my fingers into the mud, I do an elaborate circle before surrounding it with crudely drawn arcane runes. Each of the glyphs was dedicated to one of the great old ones worshipped by the Dunwich. I didn't know where the Dunwich had learned of the other gods or the great old ones spoken of by the Necronomicon, but for once I allowed myself to believe they were worthy of worship. I wasn't a psychic, not like Martha, but perhaps in the Dreamlands it was possible for a normal man to work magic. It was ironic that I, who hated magic, desperately hoped now to use it. The process took over an hour, my body collapsing several times during the procedure. Finally, I drove my fingernails hard into my palm in order to draw blood. Tossing the contents into the central circle, I called out,
Aya Cthulhu! Aya Shub-Niggurath! Tiana Shub-Niggurath Nat-Khan! Aya Hastur! Aha! Aya Thiana Hastur Gna! Kadath! Yost Nair Lethatep!
The spell, spoken in an alien language nearly impossible to speak with a human mouth, caused the world around me to shake. Like the tearing of paper, the sky split in half before the ground beneath me shattered into multiple pieces. Both above and below me were starry expanses leading to constellations I did not recognize. The Elder Thing's tower leaned and tottered before falling downwards into the infinite blackness surrounding me. Everything else similarly dissolved, reducing the once vast graveyard to nothingness. Soon I found myself standing on a shaft of earth rising out of an alien asteroid belt, with naught but floating bits of the tower's wreckage surrounding me. I imagined I could breathe in space, knowing that if I stopped believing it for a second, I would suffocate in the vast blackness around me. I tried desperately to tell myself it was all a trick of the subconscious, but I knew my dream had long since run away from me, becoming something far beyond anything my conscious mind could come up with on its own. Stepping out of the emptiness of space, walking across the astral infinity as if it were a paved road, was a man in black. Wearing a midnight-colored duster and Stetson identical to my own, he possessed skin as black as coal mixed with features close enough to be my twins. He was a being I recognized instantly as the Black Soldier, one of Nyarlathotep's countless forms. He walked with a kind of otherworldly majesty that was neither good nor evil, but terrified me to the bottom of my soul. I was in the presence of a god. The figure removed his hat and put it over his heart before bowing. Hello, John. It's been a long time. I don't recall meeting you before. You've made a strange choice for an avatar, I said, coughing. Standing upright, I felt strength returning to my limbs. Pulling off my blood-soaked shirt, I saw the scars in the shape of a hand glowing. You conjured me this way, the deity answered. Reaching over, Nyarlathotep placed his hand on my scar where it fit perfectly. The god's touch was cold, like ice, but it burned like a branding iron. There, that should put you to rights. All it required was a dozen or so inconsequential lives to repair you. For a second, I felt and knew the names of all of the people across Earth's ruins who Nyarlathotep killed to heal me. Ruby, a shopkeeper, Tom, the caravan driver, Eldok, the Deep One, and others whose lives ended in an instant for the purposes of giving me a little more life. I stared at him, horrified. I didn't ask for you to do that. No, but it's what you think gods do. They strike down the innocent and the guilty alike, never bothering to explain why. As Azathoth was born in primordial nuclear chaos, the Big Bang being one of his baby-like belches. But it was sentience which gave birth to gods like me. You wanted a reason for all the horrible things that happened to people, a meaning for your impotent, unimportant little lives to strive towards. So here I am. I looked straight at him, whispering, Mankind didn't dream you up. No, of course not. The race is older than Cthulhu's people did. Humans aren't the only ones to have begged for the answer. Nyarlathotep's voice became mocking, insulting every being of faith throughout history. I adopt whatever forms are needed, though, to give you all the knowledge you mortals beg for, the secrets that will make your dull existence bearable. I was tempted to ask, shaking my head. Then I realized that Nyarlathotep was a trickster, a being who could not be trusted, and I guessed what sort of stories he provided to those who saw him in their visions. The answer is whatever people want it to be.
Of course,
Nyarlathotep said, transforming into an Egyptian pharaoh with skin the color of obsidian.
The answer is always what they want to hear. After all, what else would they dream of a god telling them? It wasn't lost on me. This was exactly the kind of thing that I expected Nyarlathotep to say. I could not trust this strange deity, whether he was a product of my dreams or genuinely a god, but I needed him. Hell, it was possible I wasn't speaking to the real Nyarlathotep, if such a creature existed at all. The Necronomicon summoning rituals drew creatures from the dreamlands into the physical world, but gave them shape in accordance to the wishes and prejudices of the wizard casting the spell. That didn't make them any less powerful, and the least of them was powerful beyond imagination. I shook those thoughts away, lest they lead me to madness. I summoned you. I need you to take me back to my body. I need to stop Dr. Ward and avenge my squadron. Nyarlathotep transformed into a flying wasp-like creature that seemed as much fungus as insect. His next words entered my mind rather than my ears. You do not have to do anything. It is your choice to be hero or villain or valueless drain on humanity's resources. I choose to try and do what's right. I felt strong again, better than I'd felt in years. It made me sick to my stomach to think it had come at the cost of other people's lives. By whose standard? Nyarlathotep changed into a black elder thing. And for who? My own and for me, I said, trying to avoid thinking about the fact I'd long since given up on notions of right and wrong. I have some things I need to ask. Nyarlathotep, however, had already moved on. I can take you to distant Relia, Kadath, or the very heart of the universe. There you may join the ranks of the many prophets I've made immortal. Your race will be dead in 3 generations, no matter what you do. Life is an insignificant and ephemeral thing. Think carefully before you waste your meager years left on a dying race. Humanity has only 3 generations left to live? I asked, stunned. Of course. Nyarlathotep became the image of a man-sized Cthulhu, a cephalopod skull necklace around his neck. I'm surprised your race is going to last that long. You were always such a self-destructive little species. Hearing Nyarlathotep's words was like a suck in the gut, confirming my worst fears about humanity's future. Then I remembered my speech to Mercury, telling her the importance was in struggling against death rather than triumphing over it. Taking a deep breath, I recited one of the most famous lines of the Necronomicon. With strange eons, even death may die. I will not give up. I will save my race. Nyarlathotep assumed the form of my father, his color still darker than black. Grinning broadly, he snapped his fingers. Very well, soldier, I shall take you back to your body. My body caught fire. Chapter 21. I screamed as I woke up, a scenario I was rapidly becoming accustomed to. Feeling someone's hands on my chest, I grabbed them by the arm and went for my knife, only coming to my senses when I realized the person touching me was Jackie. Blinking her large eyes, Jackie was surprisingly calm for a girl with a golden knife at her throat.
Hello?
Jackie, I'm so sorry. Dropping the knife, I let go of her arm. From the feel of it, she didn't seem to be injured. Are you all right? Jackie looked down at her arm, flexing it a few times to make sure it was okay.
I'm okay, sir. Why is Mr. Jameson dead?
Turning my head, I stared across the room at Richard's body. My canine companion was lying on the floor, his mouth open and eyes staring upward. Any hope I had for Richard's survival was dashed. He looked like he'd had the ghoul equivalent of a massive heart attack. Reaching over, I closed his eyelids and said a little prayer. I doubted Richard worshipped my god, but it was my hope there was a heaven equivalent for ghouls. He was killed by ancient aliens living in the dream world, I said, taking a deep breath and getting up off the floor.
Oh, Jackie said, looking horrified. Was his sacrifice worth it?
No, I answered her honestly. It wasn't.
I see.
Jackie said, staring up at me. Yeah, I suppose you do. Checking the Relian knife's blade, I saw it was covered in blood. Apparently some things physically transferred to and from the dreamlands.
It gave me hope I could eventually drive the gold thing into Ward's black heart.
What does this mean for me?
Jackie asked. Don't worry, little one, I'll take you with me to Kingsport, I said, placing my hand on her shoulder. I'll take you with Mercury and we'll find you both a home. Jackie looked down.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I pulled the sheets off the crumpled bed in the guest room before throwing them over Richard's corpse. It was the closest thing to a funeral shroud I could provide my friend. Farewell, my friend, I prayed aloud, shaking my head. May Biyakis ferry your soul to Sagathua's caverns with swift wings. Jackie tugged on my shirt.
There are some things you need to know.
Yes. I looked away from Richard's corpse, my eyes damp. I would never be able to forget any of my times with Richard, the other things tampering, making each memory extraordinarily vivid. Certain neurological conditions gave similar perfect memories and often caused extraordinary distress to their bearers, but I was glad for it now. I would never forget Richard, and for now, that was enough.
Ms. Jessica is awake and Ms. Mercury has been kidnapped.
Jackie looked over her shoulder as she spoke, as if expecting me to explode.
What?
I asked, unsure if she was serious.
Ms. Jessica woke up just a few minutes ago,
Jackie said, looking up.
That's why I came in here to talk with you. As for Ms. Mercury, Lady Catherine came here and said Peter had taken her in to tell you when you woke up. I tried to wake you up earlier, but it didn't work. I was hoping to try again, and then you almost stabbed me.
I'm so sorry about that.
Please don't, it's okay.
No child should have to say that. I blinked, shaking my head. God damn you, Peter.
It'll be all right, Jackie said. You're going to go to Kingsport and get them back, right?
They're going to Kingsport?
That's what Lady Catherine said, yes.
I took a deep breath. All right, is she still here?
Yes,
Jackie said.
She said the journey required provisions and should be undertaken with you if at all possible.
Thank God for small miracles, I said. Jackie, it might be dangerous to go to Kingsport now. Are you sure you want to go with me now? I said, fearing the sort of fate which might await a girl brought into the intrigues Peter was involved in. Jackie looked outside one of the nearby windows into Scrapyard, a look of revulsion passing across her face.
I would rather go with you straight into the jaws of any wasteland beastie than stay here.
I see. Did any of the villagers ever... I searched for a word appropriate to the outrage I felt. Hurt you, Jackie? Jackie seemed hesitant to answer, which only confirmed my suspicion.
Never mind, Daw. His wife, though, used to. She hit me with her hand, wooden spoons, and even tried to drown me once. My Daw found out, though, and drove her out of the village. None of the other scrapyarders ever forgave him, driving out one of their own for a demon child.
I absorbed that information, deciding that I would never help this community again. I admire your father.
Did you have a Daw you loved?
Jackie's voice was wistful, as if finally touching on the raw emotion having her father killed must have instilled in her. No, I said, my father's mentioning triggering a host of memories, both good and bad. No, I didn't.
I'm sorry, Mr. Booth.
Jackie was trying to comfort me, which struck me as an obscene reversal of the natural order. It's all right. I leaned down and placed my hand on her shoulder, watching her flinch. Reaching around, I gave her a gentle hug. I finally put that ghost to rest. You know, you remind me a lot of my daughter, Anita.
Is she pretty?
Jackie asked a question which almost made me laugh. Yes, she is. I didn't mention that she'd inherited too many of my features. Martha was, by all accounts, the most beautiful woman in the Remnant. Anita, on the other hand, had been a tomboy growing up with very little feminine about her. She was pretty as opposed to gorgeous, but I doubted Jackie wanted to hear that. Someday I'll take you to meet her and your new brother Gabriel. They'll love you. They might indeed. Gabriel was morbid and arcane enough that he'd have no difficulty acclimating to the fact she was a ghoul-human hybrid. Anita might have a bit more trouble with the concept, but at heart Anita was a good little soldier. She'd trust my judgment that Jackie was no threat. Jackie patted me on the back, seemingly a little uncomfortable.
So when do we leave?
Soon, I said, patting her on the back. I've never left a child behind in distress. It is my one saving grace in a damned world. It was another reason why I was going back to the Black Cathedral, why I had to return there no matter the cost.
There were still children held prisoner by Dr. Ward, close to 1,000 of them if my restored memories were accurate. They might or might not be transformed by his experiments yet, but either way they had to be rescued. It was the right thing to do. Afterward, should I somehow survive, the world would become murky again, and the only remaining goal would be survival. It made hoping we triumphed difficult.
Thank you, Mr. Booth.
She looked on the verge of tears.
You remind me a bit of my Da.
He sounds like he was a wonderful man. Jackie's toothy grin brightened the room.
He was.
I heard the approach of a woman's footsteps. By the sound, she was athletic, built, and of medium height. Seconds later, I heard her voice at the door.
Geez, Captain, you're starting a family out here? I know you like the wastelands, but this is a bit much.
I rose up, turning to Jessica. She was wrapped up in a bedsheet and drinking from a red Christmas mug, with a bull terrier and a Santa hat on its side. Despite her ordeal, she looked much better than before. It's good to see you alive, I said, rubbing Jackie's hair. It felt like a dog's fur, and I immediately stopped. Jessica took another drink from her mug.
So what's the short version of everything that's happened since I suddenly felt like someone hit me with a tank?
Events include being found guilty of treason, having my execution faked, and being forced to sneak out of New Arkham with Dr. Mercury Takahashi. I killed a Night Gaunt, killed an Earth Mover, and went on a vision quest where I killed a bunch of pre-human alien demigods where I'd lost a good friend. Then I summoned either the devil, son of God, or both, and he brought me home. We need to go to Kingsport and get Dr. Takahashi back. She's apparently been kidnapped.
All right, Jessica said,
nodding as if all the insanity I just blathered made sense.
Who's the kid?
Jackie Howard, Mercury's ward. If you choose to disregard most of my words, understand the bit about being exiled is true. I took a deep breath, staring down. There's something else you should know. I was tried and convicted for the murder of my squadron, you included. Jessica didn't say anything for a second before replying.
Wow, the Council of Leaders is full of idiots.
Yeah, I said.
Want to go kill them next?
Jessica asked. Peter Goodhill first, Ward next, and then we can worry about anyone else we need to murder.
Understood,
Jessica said. Taking a look at me and then one at Richard's corpse, Catherine said. I take it your dream quest did not go well? I looked over at the body before glancing back at her. No, Richard's loss is one that diminishes the world. Jessica looked down at the sheet-covered body, apparently noticing it for the first time before saying,
Richard's dead? That stinks. He was a nice guy. You know, for a ghoul.
For anyone, I corrected her. To answer your question, Catherine, it went. That's all that needs to be said. Are you all right? I heard about the situation from Jackie.
Betrayal leaves scars, John,
Catherine said, her voice bitter and cold. I am most definitely not all right. I apologize for allowing your slave to be taken. I will compensate you for her loss. She is not my slave. I was surprised by her choice of language, though I suspected she was just expressing her disapproval of Dr. Takahashi. I know, I just didn't like her, Catherine said, giving a half smile before continuing. In the meantime, I've been treating your confederate to make sure she's healed enough to help you recover the doctor before she's raped and murdered. Catherine had such a lovely way of phrasing things.
Yeah, the crazy savage lady makes a mean cup of mud.
Jessica lifted her mug, swirling around its contents a bit.
What's in this stuff anyway, hon?
Ghoul urine, Catherine deadpanned. Jessica started choking and rushed out of the room, presumably to vomit. Jackie watched the entire scene in silence, barely managing to stifle her laughter. I raised an eyebrow at Catherine, biting my upper lip in order to prevent myself from laughing. That was unnecessary.
Blame the fact I'm a crazy savage.
Catherine's voice didn't waver or change.
John, if you need to talk, I'm willing to be your spiritual advisor. I sensed Richard's death and some change in your fundamental nature. The hand of Nyarlathotep is a heavy burden.
The hand is no longer there. I didn't like where this was going. I had it removed. Catherine removed my shirt, exposing the hand, which had become a deep shade of black. It now burned with the same power the Relayan knife did.
The hand is eternal, John.